he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's what do you call it, Kramer?
The billiard room.
No.
The name.
The billiard? Not the billiards. It was... Come on, Rudy. Wow. Come on. We call it the place to be.
The place to be, yes.
It's the place to be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can...
Time to play the game!
Well, you always left me satisfied and smiling, so...
That's what she said.
Why do I want this?
Yeah.
Because I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, it is now time for the Place to Be podcast. And now your hosts, Justin Rosero and Scott Criscolo.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to another great episode of the Place to Be podcast. I am your co-host, Justin Rosero, and with me, as always, is the man who constantly seems to be living his life in a clusterfuck of spiderwebs. That is my PIC, Scott Criscolo. Scott, how you doing?
Good evening, Mr. Rosero. Good evening, Place to Be Nation. It is a beautiful Wednesday night, and welcome to episode 66?
Yes, 66.
66. We were trying to do a little math on Monday night about when we would hit the C note, and we assumed it would probably be sometime just after, but not too far after New Year's. I don't think we'll hit 100 before
end
of the calendar year. We'll probably hit like maybe 97 or 98, but we'll see. We usually do 2 weeks, and we usually maybe add a third if something special, or in the case when we did the one about Randy Savage, not special, but we'll see. But 66, again, very impressive. The number keeps rising, and we thank you for that. Our wonderful Place to Be Nation. Welcome, as always. It's our Cornucopia of Knowledge podcast for the week. That is, of course, the headline show. And as usual, we have a veritable buffet of fun and excitement for you tonight. And why don't you give us the rundown? What do we got tonight?
All right. We're going to talk about a lot of different topics. We're going to start. We're going to wrap up Night of Champions, put that to bed, talk about Raw last night. A quick talk about Hell in the Cell coming up in 2 weeks, so 10 days from now. We'll talk some WrestleChat news, as always. We have the Asshole of the Week segment, which we hope to make into a big part of these headline shows. Mm-hmm. And then we have a good friend of ours. He's been on before. Andrew Flanagan is going to come on, talk MWF 10, which we attended this past weekend. We're going to review this Curb Your Enthusiasm season. Mm-hmm. And then maybe he'll stick around and do some NFL picks with us. We'll see.
Okay.
And then we'll wrap things up and say goodnight. So.
Yes.
But, let's skip all of it and say goodnight now. So let's start off with the Night of Champions review. I got the card pulled up here. So all this... you and I watched the show together, of course, with Andy as well. So what I'll do is I'll just read the results quick, and we'll give our thoughts on the matches. And I cannot believe the Braves lost again. And as you know, I'm personally invested in this team.
And, yeah, that was
yours. I need your Mets. I need your Mets to hold off the Cardinals here tonight.
No, they've been playing better the last few days. So they're trying to be as gritty as they can with what little they have left in their roster. So we'll do the best we can. I like playing spoiler. If anything else, there's nothing else they do in September. So. We'll see. But the Yankees did clinch a playoff spot today.
Yes, and hopefully the division tonight.
By the end of the night, they clinched the division. And who would you have thunk, my friend, 6 months ago that your number two starter in the postseason would be Ivan Nova?
No, but he has been unreal.
I'm on the guy's bandwagon. I've liked the guy from the beginning. Everybody was a little shaky on him, but I said, eventually this guy is going to come around. I said that. I said that to my dad.
Well, the amazing thing is he was a Rule 5 guy, and San Diego returned him.
Yeah. And now he's going to win. He could conceivably win what? He's got what? Maybe two starts left.
One more. So
he could conceivably win 17 games.
Yeah, win 17. So I'm not a big proponent of wins, but still,
for a young guy, for really regular pitchers, wins mean nothing.
If he has another good, if he has another good outing too, his ERA will be, in the high three fours, three fives. So that's excellent for a rookie in the AL East.
Yes. So we'll talk more about baseball later.
Yeah. Let's head to Night of Champions. Check in here. Of course, the opener saw Air Boom defend their tag titles against The Awesome Truth, The Miz, and R-Truth. A 10-minute match, Air Boom won by DQ after Miz shoved the referee after he got frustrated. And, of course, that led into the whole conspiracy stuff, really playing into these two guys, Truth and Miz. I really like this match. I thought it was actually a pretty good opener. Non-stop action, 10 minutes. They really get the crowd going. And really up there, outside of the big matches, it's probably the undercard match of the night, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, I thought the four-way wasn't bad either, that we'll get to in a moment, but this was good. You know, I love the chemistry that Evan Bourne and Kofi have right now. They know where each other is in the ring. They've really done a great job of working themselves together into a really good unit.
And they also have the somewhat matching tights. I know yes. Bourne has the pants and Kofi has the trunks, but they were the same style, same look.
Yeah, the same lime green, yes. I'd like to see them both wear yellow because I like Kofi's bright yellow. I always think that's cool. Always remind Kofi, watching Kofi's, anticipating Kofi's tight ensemble reminds me back, and you remember this, of course, of the old days, what color a Razor Ramon would wear on any given day.
Yes, well, it makes sense. Similar mid-level IC guy, so.
Yes, exactly. But I thought the match was great. I enjoyed the chemistry. I did like both Miz and Truth's extended heel segment in the match. I was very impressed.
And they also had the, of course, I don't know if we mentioned this, it started on SmackDown. We caught it together watching SmackDown Friday night.
Yeah.
And then at the pay-per-view, they do the remix of What's Up to You Suck, and they rap. That was pretty good.
Yes. Yeah, that is very good.
I'll give it to you. Triple H said he was going to work on establishing the tag division. It seems like they're trying to do it. So hopefully they'll keep with it and they won't get bored with it.
Yeah, I hope so, too. I don't think Triple H will. I think he likes – because I think he wants to keep these guys happy. You know, this is his roster now, technically. And there's one news and note, speaking of who's running the company. When we get to the news and notes later, there's something that really irritated me that I was reading earlier today. But we'll get to that in a little bit. I for Triple H, I think that he wants to get these guys on the shows. Pay-per-views, obviously, will be tough. But at least on Raw and SmackDown, you really want to get a good tag division. Good matches in the middle of the shows. Keep the crowd hot. Get the guys, you know, get their reps every week. And I think he's going to do that. And I think you're going to see other teams come into the woodwork. I think he's going to continue to work with the Usos. I think they wrestled on SmackDown this week.
Yes, they are on SmackDown, yep.
Yeah, so I think he's really going to do that. And this was a perfect example of that. It's a good template. I'm very impressed with Air Boom. I love their chemistry in the ring. They seem to know each other well, where they are at all times. Very happy with that. I thought the ending was a little clunky, but I guess it kind of illustrates.
They needed it to push ahead the storyline of Awesome Truth feeling like they're always being screwed and held over by the conspiracy, because that would play into the next night on Raw.
Yeah, exactly.
And later that night as well.
Yeah, exactly. So I thought it was a little clunky, but I knew it made sense. But it didn't. To me, it didn't take away from the match. I agree with you. The match was very, very well done. Probably the undercard match of the night, but. I thought that the other singles matches weren't bad either, but that was a good opener. But no, I just love watching those two guys wrestle. They're Air Boom. Evan Bourne has finally gotten his chance after the injuries to really get into a good groove. And Kofi's just Kofi, man. I can't remember the last. I mean, I know we've seen a lot of matches with him, but I can't remember watching the last real crap match he's put out on the table.
No, he's always, as long as he's given the time, he's always serviceable to good. So
it was good.
All right, so second match was another title match, as mm-hmm. the title of the pay-per-view would indicate, and that's Cody Rhodes defending his IC title against Ted DiBiase Jr. And I thought these two guys actually had a good match, it's just the crowd was not into it at all, and that's probably more of the bookers than these guys, because DiBiase, they haven't really been given a reason to cheer him, other than that one hot segment on SmackDown where he popped up from the crowd and punched Cody and beat him up.
Right.
But they really haven't given much of a reason, but I thought they worked well together.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you know, Cody using some heel chicanery to win the match, rolled up DiBiase, hooked the tights, and got the win. And that's it. So Cody retains his IC title. Another solid match. Nothing to complain about. Nothing that stole the show. But these two guys did well with the 10 minutes they were given.
Yeah, and Cody, another guy, just like really Air Boom, who've finally been given an opportunity to just let themselves cultivate and grow their characters. Because a year and a half ago, we were like, when Priceless was on their groove, this was clearly Ted DiBiase's tag team.
Mm-hmm.
And that has completely changed.
Oh,
and that's not a knock on DiBiase. I don't know. I thought the whole thing with Maurice kind of blew up in his face. I didn't think it was very good at all. And I think now you'll start to see him grow a little bit now. And I think Cody, though, has just been amazing. I hope he doesn't lose the title for a while.
I don't think he will. Although he was in part of an interesting segment Friday night, which we're going to talk about in a moment mm-hmm. when we get to the spoilers.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. But very good match. Again, and I'm kind of disappointed in the Buffalo crowd. Buffalo is usually – I mean, they really get a chance to be pissed off later on, but I thought that they could have done better.
Well, it's weird because we were talking about this Sunday at the bar. they popped for all the big spots and got into the spots they're supposed to, but they didn't have that consistent buzz. They were very quiet throughout the rest of the show.
Yes, I agree. It felt like they were kind of twiddling their thumbs and, oh, wow, yay, and then back down again. Yay, and there's another pop, and then another back down. There wasn't that din that you get at the Garden, or you get at the Dunk, or you get it in Boston, or, you know, even Nassau, who a lot of times is a little clunky too. Even they'll give you that consistent buzz. Jersey, the Prudential Center, or the old Meadowlands. But in Buffalo, where historically they've always been pretty good crowds, they were a little – their tank was on E on Sunday night. They were like in first gear. And this was – I agree with you. This was the first match that really proved that. But Cody gets the win. I'm ready now. Believe it or not, I'm ready for the whole mask bag over your head thing to end.
Yeah, I agree. I think he needs to move on past that a little bit.
Yeah,
even I think it agrees with it. I think I saw an interview with him where he talked about that he thought that was starting to kind of hamstring him a little bit.
Yeah. I think it's time to move on and go back to dashing, because dashing was good. I enjoyed it with the mirror and everything. And I love that theme, which they stopped using. Now they have that like darker, creepy theme.
Well, I don't mind that part of the gimmick with the bags over the head and all that stuff. I think his mask is going to come off eventually, but we'll see where this angle Friday leads. So let's move on.
Sure.
Next was another mid-card title match. The U.S. champion Dolph Ziggler defending against Jack Swagger, John Morrison, Alex Riley. 8:20 was that match, and Dolph Ziggler retained his title. Swagger hit Morrison with his gut-wrench powerbomb. Ziggler pulled Swagger off and covered for the win. You had picked Morrison going to this, and he was the one guy I knew was not going to win. He is just on the shit list in the doghouse. I don't know if you saw the most recent thing. Now, I've seen it saying it's debunked, but there's a rumor out there that Melina tried texting Natty saying that she wanted to show up at Raw in the crowd. She bought a ticket and was going to come out through the crowd and beat up Kelly, and she wondered if Natty had her back, thinking that Vince would buy into it being a reality angle and rehire her. And Natty went to management and told them what was going on, and they intercepted her at the gate and all this crazy shit. I don't know if that's legit or not. I didn't see a source for it, and I saw a few people say that they saw her tweeting from home or some nonsense. So I don't know what's going on. But either way, Morrison is clearly in the doghouse with the WWE, thanks to Melina's antics. So I had knew he was not. The way he's not been pushed at all since coming back from that neck injury proved that they did not have him very high on their list right now. I'm surprised he was even in this match, to be honest with you.
I'm terribly disappointed, too, because for a guy that everyone thinks is the next Shawn Michaels, his early career kind of is indicated just like Shawn Michaels was, because Shawn was on the shit list a lot as well early on. I'm disappointed. I'm upset because the guy's an immense talent, and he could take that next level. He, you know, he's a viable Money in the Bank winner. He's a viable anything if he just, you know, gets his head out of his ass. Your girlfriend got fired. Get over it.
Well, I don't think it's even him. I think it's just that she keeps doing stupid shit and he's linked to her. But
yeah.
And it looks like his role or position is actually going to another surprising mid-card guy that we'll talk about when we recap Raw. So Dolph wins there. Solid match. All four guys kept it going, kept a good pace. And with the tag match, probably the best two undercard matches. So.
Yeah, they pulled out the old heel steals the face finisher pin. We've seen that more than enough times in our history, in our lives. And I'm looking at do you think that Swagger could be a viable babyface?
Oh, I definitely think so. I thought so all along. Yeah, without a doubt.
Okay.
I think he definitely has the ability to pull it off. So I think he's kind of like Kurt Angle. He can work either way. He's a good heel due to his arrogance, but he's a good face due to his all-American kind of looks and ring work. So we forgot to mention there was a segment where Christian came out and ripped on Buffalo as always, and then he wanted the crowd to get behind him to chant for one more match. He felt he deserved another title match, as always. Sheamus came out and agreed to help Christian with the understanding that Christian would give him the first title defense. So it was funny, Sheamus and Christian together started chanting one more match, and then Sheamus kicked Christian in the face and knocked him out. And then leading up to our next match, backstage, Mark Henry had an interview with Josh Matthews and said he had 15 years of frustration built out and he was going to take it all out on Randy Orton tonight and win the World Heavyweight title. And probably the highlight of the night for a lot of fans, I'm seeing a lot of love on the internet for this, Mark Henry defeated Randy Orton to win his first World Heavyweight title at 12 minutes. Yep. Clean. Shoved off the RKO, hit a power slam, and won the title. So
that match was only 12 minutes?
I know, but it was really well worked.
It was.
The Mark Henry push, outside of CM Punk, he may be the best push guy we've seen in a few years. It's unreal what they've done to him. They've made him a legitimate monster. He put the Big Show out of action. He put Kane out of action. And he's run through everyone, put them all in his hall of pain, as he likes to say. And I liked the spot where it was right before the finish, where Henry basically gave his head to Orton, daring him to try the RKO. Basically, you can't RKO me. Go ahead and try, you skinny bitch. And when he tried it, Henry just shoved him off, hit the power slam, and got the title. So it was a clean, effective title change. And then, of course, they interviewed Henry after. And it was just a good moment for a guy that really has been through so much. And, yeah, he struggled early in his career. He was overweight a lot. And he was given a lot of shit gimmicks and shit roles. But when he's been booked as a legitimate monster like this, and he's really worked hard. He's, you know, he's still a big dude, but he's definitely in shape. Mm-hmm. And I think he earns it. And I said on our prediction show last week, I said if there was ever a time to do it, now is it. So I'm hoping it's not just a two-week reign until Hell in a Cell. That's all I'm hoping. I hope they let him run with it a little bit longer.
I mean, he could obliterate Orton in the Cell. I mean, that could be booked, and we'll talk more about it next week, but that could be booked pretty ugly. And I hope it does. And this is not a knock on Orton. Not at all.
Are there any faces that are injured or gone right now that are coming back, like in the new year or something like that? I'm trying to think of. I know Ray. Well, he might not be back by WrestleMania, though. I'm trying to think if they have Henry destroy everyone. Kind of like that plan was for Scott Steiner in late WCW in 2000, 2001. He was supposed to run through all the big names, put them on the shelf, and then they were all going to come back and take them out. So I'm wondering if that's what this is going to be up to. Maybe he puts Orton out for a little while, and then Kane, Cho, and Orton all come back, and then, you know, they finally take him out. But we'll see where they're going with this. I'm hoping it's out a two-week run. I think he deserves more, and he's really been awesome. And he was great on Raw. We'll talk about that in a minute. But he was tremendous in that segment as well. So and lethal. So
yeah, he definitely is better off in that role of just not – just be a monster.
Yep.
You know, it just he because he legitimately looks mean. He's got the hair. He's got the big bushy beard. He's got those kind of sunk, not sunk in, but those like deep set eyes. Mm-hmm. I mean, he looks like a miserable son of a bitch, and that's perfect for him.
Yeah, as Matt Rotella loves the silverback nickname, as we all know.
Oh God. I mean, this is amazing. It's amazing that this is the moment for Mark Henry. And I, you know, from those 96, 97, when he's always hurt and he was in the Nation and then he was Sexual Chocolate and he was in that weird anti-white faction with Roddy Mack.
Before this, the best he was that quick stretch in 2006 when he was feuding with Batista. He came in through the cage and all that stuff. And then he split his kneecap in half and that was the end of that.
Yeah. And he fought Taker. I mean, he's one of Taker's 19 victims.
That was a good run. And then even his run with MVP was good leading up to this heel turn, you know, because it set the stage for the heel turn. He was like a happy-go-lucky face, and then they turned him heel off of that. So,
right.
Well-built, and obviously the best run of his career, and it's good to see him. A legit nice guy from everything you read in here. Very considerate of his coworkers and gets very upset if anything that bad happens. And, you know, it's good to see him rewarded like this. So, all right, moving along, we have another title match, and that's Kelly Kelly defending the Divas title against the hometown hero, Beth Phoenix. Beth had Natty with her, and Kelly had Eve. And in another upset, just like SummerSlam, Kelly pinned Beth to retain her title, reversed the Glam Slam yet again into a roll-up. Crowd was not happy, as you'd expect. Beth and Natty not happy, as you'd expect. And you thought Eve was going to maybe turn. It looks like it could be coming eventually, but it did not happen that night, so... Kelly keeps her title, and the Divas of Doom are frustrated once again. So, I don't know where they're going with all this.
I thought it was pretty stupid. I honestly thought it was pretty stupid. You pump up the – you do the big heel turn. Ab, she becomes number one contender. You do the big match. And I understand that, you know, she can get lucky at SummerSlam. But you know what made it even worse for – you know what made it even more annoying for me? The match ended exactly the same way.
Yeah.
Like Beth is a dope. And
well,
that's
– yeah, I can't tell if they're trying to do that or if they're trying to make it like Kelly's just getting lucky each time. I don't know what they're doing. I honestly don't know where they're going with it, and it's frustrating because the Divas of Doom seems like such a good idea, but it's like they're waiting to pull the trigger on it for some reason.
Exactly. I don't know. I don't know where they're going with it, but and then they lost again on Raw in the tag, which we'll talk more about Raw in a bit. But it just was just such a mess. I'm frustrated because clearly Natalya and Beth are the two most talented on the roster. And Kelly, look, I have nothing against Kelly, but she doesn't need this belt. she's one of the most popular anyway. So I don't know. It's very frustrating. I have to admit, it's very frustrating.
Yeah, we'll have to see where they, you know, where they go with it. But I don't know. Let's move on.
No, I don't either. It's not much to say. I mean, it's frustrating. It's definitely frustrating.
All right, so our next match is for the WWE title, and this probably was maybe the, I'd say it's probably the most disappointing match of the night. 17 minutes, John Cena facing Alberto Del Rio. Cena actually forced Del Rio to tap clean to the STFU after he beat up Ricardo Rodriguez. The match itself was kind of blah, and the fact that Del Rio jobbed already, I don't know why they even bothered wasting money in the bank and giving him the title. Just to have Cena win it back a few weeks later, just to interject, the Orioles have again defeated the Red Sox, taking 3 out of 4 in that series. So,
yes,
Red Sox free fall continues.
Yes, but
not happy. I don't get it. I thought Del Rio was going to have the title going into the Mexico tour coming up in October. The only thing I can think of is that they want him to win it in Mexico, because I think they're actually having a Raw in Mexico in October. So. Maybe they're going to have him win it there, and they hope, you know, hoping to do the little reverse thing where Cena's booed and Del Rio gets the pop. I don't know. That's the only thing I can think of. I don't get why they wouldn't have him have the title going there. It doesn't make sense to me.
Oop. Sorry, I had a glitch there. Sorry about that. I didn't catch that last thought. Sorry, that was my internet was getting a little squirrely.
I was just saying, I'm surprised that they took the title off from going to Mexico. The only thing I can think is that they want him to have the title when they or have them win the title on the Raw that emanates from Mexico in a few weeks. That's the only thing I can think of.
Yeah, I didn't get it. I don't understand where they were leading. Very strange, unusual situation. I don't know. I know that Cena is incredibly popular.
Why did they even take the belt off him? And well, I guess it technically came off Punk, but right. Why even bother giving it to Del Rio then? Why not just have Cena beat Punk at the show? I don't get it. I don't know why they bothered giving Del Rio this quick reign after all this build up. They built him up since January. He finally wins it, and then he fucking loses it 2 weeks later, 3 weeks later. It's like, well, what's the point?
Yeah, and obviously they may not have totally laid out whatever this Rock storyline is going to be. It doesn't involve the title. Does it not involve the title? I don't understand. So it's confusing the month by month situations of what the, you know, what the net title situation is going to be.
Right.
And does Del Rio win it back in 2 weeks? Is Punk going to, I mean, we'll get to Raw and let you know the future, but the match itself was not that bad.
It was all right. I mean, it was okay. It wasn't great.
I mean, I wasn't really crazy about the build, maybe because it was shadowed by the Triple H Punk stuff, but I don't know. I was hoping for more out of Del Rio. I don't know who to blame. Is the result just taking away from the fact the match was dull? Was the Buffalo crowd still out of it? I don't know.
I think Del Rio's just been booked awful since he switched to Raw, which is not a surprise. He won the Rumble. They held off. They had him lose it at WrestleMania. Then they have him, you know, not take advantage. They give the title to Christian and then Orton. And then he goes to Raw and he's just kind of putting around in the background, feuding with Big Show and all this other crap. And then he finally wins the title after choking it away so many times and loses 3 weeks later. I just don't understand what they're doing with him. It seems like they're really blowing a chance where they could have had a major heel star.
Yeah, I'm confused. I don't know what they're going to go with it. We'll talk more about it. I mean, obviously, you know, we have this rapid fire pay-per-view situation coming up, so there's a lot of big things happening, but I don't know. I don't know if they're positioning Cena to become a heel. I mean, I know we can talk.
I've given up on that. I don't know when that's happening. And of course, they did announce over the weekend, they released that poster. I don't think we talked about this last week. I think it was after that. That Rock released the poster on his Facebook page, and then it was confirmed on WWE.com that Cena and Rock are going to be on the same Survivor Series team at Survivor Series. So.
That should be interesting.
Yeah, well, we have plenty of time to talk about that. We don't have to get into that yet. So, all right, let's wrap up Night of Champions. Main event, of course, Triple H, CM Punk, no DQ match, 25 minutes long, and, of course, the stipulation was if Triple H lost, he would be out as COO. That pretty much telegraphed things. Well, not for you, obviously, but many of us realized that they were not going to take him out of that role already. So Punk looked – they both looked good. They both fought hard. They both brawled all over the place. The first half of the match was solid, and then it turned into a real clusterfuck. Overbooked mess. But the highlight was probably Punk around the 14-minute mark hit a Macho Man elbow off the top rope through Triple H, who was on the Spanish announce table. It was a crazy, crazy bump.
Yeah, it was nuts.
2 minutes later, Miz and R-Truth came out, attacked both men, and beat up the referee. Of course, earlier after their match, they were bitching backstage about how they were screwed once again. So Triple H and Punk fight them off, and then Marty Funkhauser comes out, and he gets involved. Another referee comes out, and before that referee can slide in the ring to count the match for Triple H, Laurinaitis pulls him out and punches him.
Yeah.
And knocks him out. So then, 21-minute mark, Laurinaitis is seen texting on his phone. And then, of course, a minute later, Kevin Nash reappears, even though he was fired, and comes out of the crowd, attacking both men. Triple H would then grab his sledgehammer. He knocks Nash out, hit the pedigree on Punk. I think it was actually the third pedigree of the match. And Nash had hit Punk with the jackknife as well, I believe. So,
yes, he did.
You know, I saw a few people complaining that Punk lost, but you know what? It took a lot to beat him. I'm fine with it. He didn't lose clean. He took a big overbooked mess. Two other guys beating him up, Nash jackknifing him, and like a few pedigrees to finally put him down. So, I don't think Punk looked too weak at all.
No, I don't think he did. Actually, you know what? That never even entered my mind when we were watching that match. I just I understand why they had to do the last five or six minutes. It just looked so lousy on camera. I don't know.
They could have done without Miz and Truth. I know they wanted to put them over and use because the storyline they had planned for the next night, but I think just doing the stuff with Funkhauser and Nash would have been plenty.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not upset Triple H lost, obviously, even though I didn't pick him, but it's interesting to see what. You know, if they're going to go through this whole collusion conspiracy thing, they better do it right. You know, finally, it seems like Punk and Triple H finally looked at each other and said, you know what, I may not like you, but I think we're both getting dicked around here. I kind of liked where that promo Monday was going. We'll get more to that in a minute, but the match was very good. Now, I think without all the bullshit at the end, these two could have an even better match. I thought Triple H was in decent shape. Obviously, he hasn't wrestled since April. But Triple H is one of those guys who, you know, doesn't take much for him. But overall, I thought the flow of the match was good. It was a lot of big bumps and hot spots, and I love the Savage elbow. That last 6 minutes just looked so awful on camera, but I understood why they had to do it.
And yeah, it was just messy and sloppy. And
it was just very sloppy. I was not crazy about it.
And, of course, Nash is out. Filming his movie, so to explain his absence on Raw this week and going forward, I think in the next couple weeks they had him take that sledgehammer shot, so they'll use that to sell. But he's obviously still in the mix. That was obviously a bullshit termination. He's not really fired. So all right, let's spill into Raw. So from Cleveland, show opened up with Punk and Triple H cutting a promo, talking about their match, and Triple H gave Punk credit for the match and said that Del Rio and Punk also deserve title rematches, so he made the match for Hell in a Cell. Inside the cell, it's going to be a three-way Del Rio, Cena, and Punk. Triple H says he has nothing to do with all this nonsense with Nash and this conspiracy talk and all this other stuff. John Laurinaitis comes out, says everything's gone too far. Punk is in the middle of the conspiracy. Punk said Laurinaitis is behind it because he wants Triple H's job, and he's the one that sent Truth to Miz to the ring and cut his mic and did everything else. Laurinaitis reminded Punk that he works for him, and then he fires Punk. Punk just laughs, and Triple H rehires him on the spot and tells Laurinaitis, "Hey, you work for me, shut your mouth." And he said by the end of the night, someone would be fired. So, and it was here, right, that Laurinaitis also said, you know, doing a very good job, basically. He didn't.
No, he said, I understand Punk, and I agree with you that Triple H has lost control of this show.
Right, yeah, that's what it was. Yeah, that he lost control. So,
Funkhauser's getting his, but we all knew that this was happening, and you know, he's getting his quips in. But I thought it was a good promo. It wasn't anything fancy, but it is starting to kind of – it's now the time where they're keeping both of them positioned as baby faces. Triple H's pops have not diminished, really. Punk's obviously have not diminished. And we'll see where they go. But they really – again, it's very intricate. It's well-worked. But they got to keep going. They can't stall on it.
Yep.
Now they got to keep it going. But I had no problem with it. I thought it was good.
And then also later in the night announced for Hell in a Cell is Mark Henry and Randy Orton will be facing off. But then on SmackDown, as we'll get to in a moment, they announced that Christian will face Randy Orton for one last match, and the winner gets Mark Henry in the Cell. So that match is pretty much set, but not official.
Mm-hmm.
It matches Sheamus, Justin Gabriel, and Air Boom defeated Christian, Wade Barrett, Otunga, and McGillicuddy. Del Rio crushed Morrison in 49 seconds, which again pushes the thought.
Yeah, I'm starting to figure that out now. Yeah, yeah, making sense. Yeah,
he's definitely in trouble. So, Sin Cara and Cody fought to a no contest when the other Sin Cara came out and faced off with the heel one, and the heel one attacked the original. So,
yeah,
and then they took turns knocking each other down. Kelly Neve.
They're like mimicking their moves. Yeah, it was actually pretty good. Just quickly, it was actually a pretty good segment. They were kind of mimicking each other's moves. It's interesting. I'm kind of looking forward to seeing where that's going.
Yeah, and there is some stuff that happens on SmackDown this week with it. So, all right, Del Rio, squash Morrison. Kelly and Eve defeated Beth and Natalya. It's just getting old at this point. Yeah. Then, in a very surprising segment, guest host Hugh Jackman, who I guess is getting actually rave reviews for his work, because I guess he's a legitimate fan going way back, and a lot of the backstage members, wrestlers and other workers and employees were really into him. They thought he did a great job. Mm. And he ended up giving Zack Ryder a match, non-title match with Dolph Ziggler. And Ryder actually won the match clean. Oh, I'm sorry. Jackman interfered and helped Ryder win, but he pinned him with his finisher, the Rough Rider. So big push for Zack Ryder there. And it looks like I said, I think he's the guy that's kind of getting Morrison's spot now at this point. And hopefully they're going to use this to elevate him. And John Cena's been making a big push for Ryder on Twitter and all those other social media over the week. He's trying to get him his number of followers up and really been pushing him strong. So
right,
it looks like Ryder's finally getting that push that they've been waiting for.
Yeah, well, he's earned it. And we had that on mute because we were, of course, recording our Vintage Vault episode. And I didn't realize it was a non-title match. I just saw the pin. I'm like, oh, my God, did he just win the U.S. title? And then they raised hands, and obviously he didn't. But I said this to you off mic. I think he's going to win one of the two secondary belts at some point in the next like 6 to 8 months, either the U.S. title definitely. Or the Intercontinental title. Probably the U.S. title because that one's the one that's going to be bantered around more because Cody, I don't think, is going to lose the IC title anytime soon. So,
all right. So then in probably the segment of the night, Mark Henry was interviewed by JR. Mm-hmm. He grabbed JR by the throat and started choking him out. And Jerry Lawler comes out. Throws some punches at Henry, but Henry hits him with the power slam, takes him to the floor, and power slammed him through the announce table. And Lawler looked legit fucked up, and it turned out he was. He had to go to the hospital, and his back, I guess they forgot to gimmick the table, and his back is a mess right now. So I don't know if he's going to be on Raw next week or what, but he was legitimately injured, and they said Henry was a mess backstage, upset about it, about the whole situation, about hurting King. So we'll see. It was a cool segment, though. Too bad for
King. They know what to do with him right now. It's very simple. There's really nothing you can do to screw it up. I mean,
Let's hope they don't.
Well, they can't. They can by having him job out, but at least of enhancing the character, cultivating it.
Right.
They've done a tremendous job of just making him a monster. They don't have to do anything complicated or fancy promos with a lot of, you know, juicy lingo. We'll leave that to the other guys, the Punks and the Cenas and the Ortons and the Triple H's. You know, Henry just needs to put over the fact that he's a son of a bitch. And he's a big guy, and after 15 years, he has what he wants, and he dares anybody to take it away from him, period. That's all you need to do. It's working great. And, you know, it's funny because Lawler was the guy that got him, not got him started, but that was his first match, In Your House Mind Games.
Mm-hmm.
First match. So,
yeah, so a good little synergy there. I was wondering if they were building up to a match with them on TV or something, but I don't know now what Lawler's situation is. So we'll see if he's on Raw Monday. That'll tell the story. But
right.
And then the main event, John Cena and Punk defeated Miz and R-Truth. After the match, Triple H came out, fired Miz and Truth for running their mouths and getting involved in everything. Backstage, they jumped Triple H while he was addressing the locker room. And then Triple H had them thrown out of the building. And, of course, on WWE.com, they announced their future endeavors. So we'll see where that goes with Miz and Truth. But as of right now, they are fired.
Mm. Oh, I'm sure there's something really brewing there successfully. And good for, you know, I got to give Miz credit because a lot of people, again, because everyone has to be, the one thing about wrestling fans sometimes that bother me, everybody has to be a main eventer all at the same time.
Yeah.
Nobody could take a step down for a few months. So, of course, everyone thought that Miz has been getting punished. But, you know, it's cyclical. And I'm actually glad Miz has kind of gotten a pretty juicy role here to kind of hold him over until he's back in the title picture, which you know is going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
He, of course, will get back in the title picture. He's getting a look as a mid-carder now than Del Rio is his champion.
Oh, without a doubt, yeah.
You know, so...
They like Miz by all reports. They like how he represents the company. He's a young star and a good, clean face for them to put out there. So, and he's known, you know, to the mainstream as well. So I don't see him going anywhere for a while until he wants to. So,
right.
So, all right. So that wraps up Raw. Hell in a Cell has those two title matches that we announced, so we'll see what else they have over probably next week. We'll talk, obviously, we'll be doing our picks, and we'll see how much more they announce. So, all right, so let's get into the news. And, of course, to do that.
Before we do that, though, we have to take a break. Everyone take a deep breath, because we're early on in the show. So after this, we got on the long mile. So take a deep breather, get a soda, get a cocktail, and we'll get ready for our news segments brought to you by our good friends at WrestleChat.net, because
promotional consideration is paid for by the following.
How many pro wrestling news websites do you visit to get your daily news? 3, 4, maybe 5? Do yourself a favor and make that number 1. WrestleChat.net, the only professional wrestling news site that brings you all wrestling news all day long, and is home of the critically acclaimed Still Real to Us podcast, starring former CZW, ROH, and ECW announcer Eric Gargiulo and the champ Jeff Peck. That's WrestleChat.net. WrestleChat, it's where it's at.
And, of course, our weekly news and notes segment, which will be starting shortly, is brought to you by our good friends at WrestleChat.net. Don't forget, of course, they have an exceptional message board. Hop on there. I've seen a few of the topics. They're firing up. And, of course, you can link right to our Place to Be podcast page right on the right side of the screen. So check your news and notes and click on, and then you can hear us talk about them. And that's all from our good friends at WrestleChat.net.
Hi, this is John Cena Sr., a.k.a. Johnny Fabulous, the richest, the most wealthiest, the most handsome man in the world. I have the women, I have the yachts, the cars, the money, and you have to go to work every day. Well, you know what? This is J-Fab saying to you, this is podcast. Is that what it is? What is it?
The Place to Be podcast.
There you go. You hear what he said? He said, another worker, because I hire him, the Place to Be podcast.
J-Fab brings us back in. It's time for the WrestleChat.net news segment. So
the money he paid you, is that going to the general fund?
Don't you worry about it. Don't you worry about it.
Johnny Fab. What a great guy, Mr.
Yeah,
Cena.
Excellent guy. We'll talk about him more in a few moments. So,
yeah.
So let's hit the WrestleChat news. We got a few stories to talk about. Not a ton of news this week, but
no,
interesting
quiet
story. So
but
let's
one thing I want to talk about. Yeah. There's one thing I want to get into momentarily. I maybe it's on our list. If not, I want to talk about it. I read it somewhere else. It really bothered me, and it's about the future of the backstage situation. But why don't we do our stories from our good friends, the champ, Jeff Peck. We got to get those guys on.
Someday. Eric, I'll do him a little graces with his presence.
With his presence. But all right, go ahead.
All right. Raw this week got a 3.0. It's up from last week, which is one of its lowest ratings in 14 years. Same rating they had 2 weeks ago, 3.0. So, you know, they started to face some stiff competition. Not only do you have NFL, Monday Night Football's back.
Yep.
You also have 2.5 Men returned. Although, what time's that on? Is that on before 9? I'm not sure.
I think it's 8:30.
Okay, 8:30. Yeah. But still, I know they got a big lead into that other new show that followed it. Got a huge rating coming off of that. Also, you have Pawn Stars returned. And this Monday, they also had the roast of Charlie Sheen to go up against. So, some stiff action, and unless they get their shit together like they had earlier in the year, I don't see that rating going up at all. So
no, it's upsetting because the shows were, you know, there was a stretch, of course, in the summertime where the shows were very good.
Yep.
And I don't know, that's disappointing. I mean, we use the Monday Night Football reasoning every year, but after a while, I mean, they were blowing Monday Night Football away during the Attitude Era.
Well, no, yeah, it all comes down to the product. My point is just that, you know, they really need to step it up now because things aren't going to be easy for them. They're not alone. So
right.
I'm not blaming football for their situation. I'm blaming them for not being able to hang with football. But now is when they need to really get their shit together. And I don't know. We'll see. Hey, it just doesn't feel like must-see TV each week. And they had that over the summer with the Punk thing. And just, I don't know, they just didn't follow up with it. And honestly, I don't even know how they could have followed up with it at this point. I don't know what they really could have done to carry that momentum over it without it being stale. And just to give you an update, CC Sabathia left the game with bases loaded, one out. Robertson got a double play on one pitch. So,
oh, good.
That game's still continuing. And I know there's probably like three people, me, Jason Greenhouse, and I'm sure there's one other Yankee fan out there that care, but I don't give a shit. I'm saying it anyway. So,
This would be his 20th tonight, right?
Yes. Well, no, he's out. It's tie games, 2-2. So.
Oh, bummer. Okay.
He'll have one more shot Sunday, but he's probably not going to pitch a full game, so I don't know if he'll even get the chance at it. But okay, so I want to talk about SmackDown quick. We're not going to go through the whole taping, but Just to go ahead and give you guys spoiler warning, we're going to talk a little bit about SmackDown right now.
Yes.
The highlight segment seems to be Cody Rhodes versus Randy Orton. Rhodes ends up winning by DQ when Orton goes crazy and beats him bloody. That's right.
Yeah.
Blood has returned. They said yes. Blood was pouring as Orton beat Cody with his mask, a chair, and the bell. Officials came down to clean Cody up, but Orton puts him to the announce table with an RKO, and then RKOs him again. So I don't know what they're going to show on TV, how much they're going to show on TV, but and they said the crowd was shocked and loving it, and Orton was great and being like in nuts, and Cody was just gushing blood. So it's curious that they're doing this on SmackDown, obviously because it's taped. So I'll see what kind of angles they use and everything. But I'm really interested in seeing if this is a return and setting the stage for what could be maybe be a return to blood to pay per view, because if there's ever a show to do it, Hell in a Cell is obviously the one.
Yeah, we've talked about it. I think we talked about it a little bit last week, how the Hell in a Cell concept for a show is utterly ridiculous, but even more so to the fact that the last two pay-per-views, I don't think, there definitely wasn't any blood at last year's, and I don't think there was blood the year before. And that's just stupid.
It's been a while since we've had blood, so.
I mean, the template, and we've watched a few Hell in a Cells, all of them in our day. The two, in terms of blood, maybe if there's another one, correct me, but the two for me that are the templates for bloody Hell in a Cell matches is the first one,
yep.
Undertaker and Shawn, because you remember Shawn. Shawn, I think, lost about 6 pints that night. Yep. He was just a mess. And the other one is Batista and Triple H at Vengeance 05. I mean, both of them were just an utter disaster.
Was there blood in the Triple H Mankind one or Cactus Jack one? Sure, Triple H blood. He bled.
Yeah, Triple H probably blood. Mick had a small cut, I remember, over his head. Triple H, I'm sure, busted himself open. I don't know, though, because Triple H busted himself open at the Rumble. I don't know. Did he bleed 2 months in a row?
Sure.
He might have. But I remember, he was a mess against Batista at Vengeance 05. He got hit in the face with a sledgehammer, and he was actually spit it up, I remember. But the last 2 years, the Hell in a Cells have not lived up to expectations. So maybe this is the moment now where they turn the corner and get it done. So.
All right. Now, I misspoke before. I said Christian fought Orton on Friday night. He actually fights Mark Henry, and the winner will defend against Orton in the Cell. So
yeah,
I'm not going to give any other spoilers. We gave that one. So tune in. Check out SmackDown Friday. And also, there is a continuation of the Sin Cara. An interesting twist on the Sin Cara stuff this week. So check that out.
Yes. So.
All right, we talked about this next news story a little bit earlier, and that is, of course, Mark Henry being very upset after a legitimately injured Jerry Lawler. Let me see here. I wanted to get more on Lawler, obviously going to the hospital. As noted last night, Jim Ross wrote on Twitter last night that Jerry Lawler was hurting bad. The WWE Insider account posted a photo of an ambulance backstage saying it took Lawler to the emergency room, and, of course, he is in some pain, so. Hopefully King is healthy and doing all right, but I wouldn't mind taking a little break from him on TV.
I tell you, and it's funny because you and I were talking. Remember, for those that don't know, Michael Cole lost his voice during
the main event
on Sunday. And you and I commented that I thought Lawler and Booker T alone were actually pretty good.
Yeah, I thought so too. They actually made a good team without having to worry about Cole. And they both kind of shared play-by-play and color. And Booker wasn't, you know, just trying to get his little quips in. He was actually working well as... I think Booker, you're going to give these guys time. They're not all naturals, but they can develop. So
yeah, I agree.
We'll give them some time. All right, next story regards Dolph Ziggler and another injury. Announced on Twitter that he suffered a hairline mandibular fracture of his jaw from the punch that Hugh Jackman hit him with. And
wow.
He'll be wearing a mouth guard because he doesn't want to miss any time. And Dolph is really, if you follow his Twitter, well, one of those guys is really dedicated to working his gimmick and busting.
Yes.
You know, he's in the same... levels the Miz kind of as far as really working hard to improve and getting his gimmick over and connecting with the fans on that level as a heel. So good job there by Dolph Ziggler. I think he's another
yes.
guy that has a bright future.
Yes, I agree. Yep. No, he I was surprised that he won on Sunday, but he's earned it. And, you know, we kind of goofed with him. He was the modern day Billy Gunn, but he's definitely better than that. And he's shown it. So for a lot of guys who gave him crap that the name was dumb, you know, 3-4 years ago, he's definitely proved everyone wrong, and
well,
he's
the name's still kind of dumb, but
well, and he's made Vicky Guerrero. Vicky, I just wanted to some of the during the Edge run there in 07, 08, I wanted to just throttle her, but she's definitely become easier to, and she's gotten a lot more attractive than mm-hmm. she did 5 years
yeah,
ago.
Yeah, she's in awesome shape right now.
Yeah, she looks great. So I think
and right in your age range, so you should be good.
Yeah, well, you know, I couldn't do that. God bless. Eddie would be very proud at the woman she's become. So, but we'll see. He continues to kind of play it up. And another guy that may benefit from John Morrison being in the doghouse. Spreading the love.
All right. And speaking of guys in the doghouse, once again, we have a Matt Hardy update.
Lovely.
Today's the official day. He checked into rehab. And he gave his one last tweet. But there's other nonsense going on with Matt Hardy. Of course, he was arrested once again.
What a putz.
What happened was the cops were tipped off. They had a search warrant, went to his house, and found some steroids and other drugs. And that's it. They arrested him. So I don't know where that stands as far as him going to rehab and being arrested. I'm not too up on the rest of the situation. But this involves his girlfriend, Rebe Sky. She's adamant that she did not drop the dime on her boyfriend last week, telling TMZ the only reason she blabbed the cops was because they intimidated and threatened her. The 25-year-old Sky tells us, after Matt was rushed to the hospital for an adverse drug reaction, cops took her to the police station to question her about the incident. Apparently, Rebe gave cops enough information for a search warrant because when she returned home, the cops were there in full force, having just ransacked the joint, and she says that's when they threatened her with jail if she didn't answer more questions. Rebe tells us she would have kept her mouth shut at the station if she knew they were accumulating evidence that she would never do anything to put Matt in a compromising position with the law. So, you know, more usual bullshit with him. Arrested, not arrested, going to jail, go to rehab. I can't keep up. So we'll leave it there. I'm all set.
Yeah. Yep.
We'll
pretty much
just give you the facts. So.
Yep.
And actually, you know, I do have one last update as to what they found. Here's the full story and the arrest part of it. Earlier today, we reported that former WWE and TNA star Matt Hardy was arrested once again on drug charges, included possessing a controlled substance with intent to sell or deliver, possessing controlled substance, maintaining a drug dwelling, and misdemeanor, possession of drug paraphernalia, according to the release. Matt Hardy's girlfriend, Rebecca Reyes, Rebe Sky, called 911 last Wednesday, said Matt told police Matt was strung out on pills and needed help. When they arrived at the home, Matt had trouble speaking and was very unsteady. He did not smell like alcohol, and so they figured he was under the influence of other substances. The EMTs were called, and they went. Rebe told police that Matt had been safe at his home that contained numerous Vicodin pills, which Matt did not have a prescription for. She gave police the keys to the safe. After a warrant was granted, police seized the following items: empty small round glass containers of blue locust extract, a handwritten note, vials of liquid substance, vials of powder substance, syringes, empty K2 smoke blend packet, almost $2,000 in cash, and a small blue pill. So,
what is half this crap?
I don't.
What the hell is blue locust extract?
I don't know.
What is he doing?
He's a train wreck.
At least Jeff was selling legitimate drugs. What the hell is he selling? He's like selling fake drugs.
I don't know if he's selling, using them. I don't know. I don't know. He's a fucking mess.
Absolute mess. I don't know. I have nothing to say. Nothing to say. There's nothing to say anymore. It's kind of sad when Jeff's life is in the. Actually, you know what's even sadder? That the only guy in that whole Omega group that's not a complete piece of crap is Shannon Moore. That's, you know. You got both Hardys. You got Helms. Shannon Moore's the only one that's not a total piece of crap. It's unbelievable. I don't know. That's tough to gauge.
Well, and speaking of Matt Hardy, of course, he has our reigning 1 week reign of the place to be.
Asshole of the week.
Folks, I'd like to sing a song about this. And what we did was I put this thread up on the Place to Be podcast Facebook page asking for your nominees for the Asshole of the Week. We have 9 entries. Mm-hmm. You know, fewer for more or multiple for the same guy.
Right.
So I'm going to read all these, and then you and I are going to decide who is the official Place to Be Asshole of the Week.
Okay.
Matt Souza. Floyd Mayweather. For the fight on Saturday night, he clearly knew what he was doing. He's a dirty fighter and a punk. I don't think we're ever going to see Mayweather get his ass kicked by Pacquiao. He gets my vote for asshole of the last 10 years. Kevin Bowers. Mayweather definitely gets asshole of the week. He fights dirty and got punked out by an old guy. Eric Cafiero. John Cena for winning the title again. Jason Greenhouse. Matt Hardy. Good for him. He's going to rehab, but he doesn't have to post a YouTube video or tweet about it. Just go take care of whatever you need to do. Clean your junky ass up. Until he shows that he can clean himself up, he'll remain an attention and sympathy-seeking asshole. WWE Creative. Our buddy J.R. Senior D'Amato. WWE Creative for booking Cena to tap out ADR for the title. Austin Pfaff. sorry, Scott, Triple H. But I know he's behind this whole thing against CM Punk, and CM Punk is my Ric Flair Legion of Doom. Like, this to you. Brian Samick, definitely Mayweather. Pacquiao would dominate him, and he knows it. Which is why he bitches out with some excuse or another every time he gets ready to fight. Sorry, Mayweather, it ain't Larry Merchant. That ain't worth shit. It's you, Holmes. And Corey Ferreira, Matt Hardy dude, keeps going on about his entry into rehab, and then he gets arrested again. I think he's asshole of the month, let alone the week. So we got 2 votes for Matt Hardy, 3 for Mayweather, 1 for the creative team, 1 for Triple H, and 1 for Cena. What's your vote? Are you up on the Mayweather situation?
Yeah, I am. I saw what happened. And
like he was a little debated into it, though, right? I mean, that Ortiz guy hit him, headbutted him, came out with an aggressive headbutt.
Yeah, he did headbutt him. That's why I'm not going to totally...
I might Mayweather, ripping on Larry Merchant and all that stuff, so I don't know.
I may have to give it to Matt Hardy for a second straight week. I think he's just there's no one right now that has reached that level of stupidity yet. So I have to vote. My pick or my participation would be for Matt Hardy for a second straight week.
All right, I guess I got to break the tie. Normally, I would go for Mayweather, but the fact that he was baited in with that headbutt, even though he's still a douchebag and you know he's probably going to do something stupid anyway, Matt Hardy just really fucking pisses me off.
Yeah.
He finally does the right thing, admits he needs to go to rehab, and then the cops show up because he's all pilled up out of his mind, and they find all this shit, and enough's enough with this guy. I'm giving him one more run this asshole of the week, and then I'm hoping we don't hear from him again. So, Matt Hardy, congratulations. You are once again the place to be. Asshole
of the week. Okay, Russia, Germany, Romania, they can have all the democracy they want. They can have a big democracy cakewalk right through the middle of Tiananmen Square, and it won't make a lick of difference because we got the bombs. Okay, John Wayne's not dead. He's frozen. And as soon as we find a cure for cancer, we're going to throw out the tube. Okay. So now with that, asshole of the week has been settled. And I like that new segment. I think it's fun.
It'll be good. I'm definitely going to submit, try and get the Place to Be Nation's take on that every time. So
yes, thank you for your input on that.
Okay, so with that, we now move on, and we're going to bring on our special guest.
A guy who will never, ever...
not be...
Asshole of the Week.
Oh, okay.
No, I'm saying he'll never win.
Oh, I was going to say he'll never not be the Asshole of the Week.
Right, he'll never win Asshole of the Week.
No, I'm saying he'll always win it. He'll never not be the Asshole of the Week. All right, well, let's hope he's there. So We're going to go ahead and bring on our man. We're going to talk NWF and Curb, and maybe he'll stick around for the NFL stuff, too. And that is, of course, the one, the only, the biggest fucking loser on the whole fucking show, Andrew Flanagan.
The Tower of Terror.
Of course, we're going to give him his own theme music. How you doing tonight?
I appreciate the theme music, definitely.
Okay. Do you appreciate my introduction of you?
The biggest fucking loser on the whole fucking show. Yes, that's great.
I know how much you enjoy.
He'll make you a plaque that says "Asshole of the Universe." So you're beyond asshole of the week.
Who's your vote for asshole of the week? Were you listening to that segment?
I was. I don't know. I didn't. I'm not prepared to answer the question, so I'll just go with Mayweather.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Tied it back up on us. All right. Let's before we get into Curb, let's talk about our weekend jaunt up to Melrose, Mass. On Saturday.
Yes.
Of course, as we talked about, our friend John Walters was going to be facing Low Key in a top contenders match for the MWF. So we headed up there. They were having their 10th anniversary special. They had a lot of famous names. So we got up there to Melrose around, what time did we hit there? Like maybe 4:30-ish?
Yeah.
I would say like 5. But
yeah, close to 5.
Yeah, because the Fan Fest was just getting started. So it was definitely between 5 and 5:15.
So, of course, we get there, and Andy goes and gets a Starbucks coffee, and while he's in there, Scott and I are crossing the street, and you can tell it's going to be a good night because we all already started chaos. As we were waiting to cross on the crosswalk, some lady sped by us and didn't let us cross, and there happened to be a cop watching, coming the other way, threw on his lights, blocked the street, whipped around, and pulled her over and gave her a ticket. So that was pretty cool,
yes.
Seeing law enforcement in action because of us.
Yes.
The place to be, PICs crossing the street and fucking things up for everyone. So.
Yes, exactly.
So then we got to the building, and of course the Fan Fest was going on. We went in, paid our money to support the promotion.
Yes.
Talked to John for a few minutes, and then we went, of course, to the awesome autograph signing and memorabilia stands as well were going on there. So, Scott, tell us, who do we see in line signing autographs there?
Let's see. Well, we saw Mr. USA, Tony Atlas, who I would actually have an encounter with later on in the evening. We'll get to that in a minute. We saw Tony Garea, the pride of New Zealand, the pride of Auckland, New Zealand. We saw the Boogeyman. Speaking of the Boogeyman, we got that little trinket from him, and I gave it to Matt Rotella on Monday, and it was like giving him a brand new car. He loves that thing, the little ghost man.
Very good.
So now he plays the Boogeyman's theme like every 20 minutes, and I just want to bang my head against the desk. But we saw, let's see, who else was signing? Abyss, the monster Abyss was there. From TNA.
Paul Bearer
was there.
Ox Baker.
Well, we'll get to him in a minute. Because the Ox had his own table, so he gets his own moment. But who else was on that table?
Carlito?
Yes.
Carlito. Yes, Carlito was on the end. I don't think it was, and Low-Key.
Yeah, Low-Key was there as well.
And Low-Key was signing as well. But then behind them, having his own table, the master of the heart punch, and a guy who, it's funny because he's kind of a legend in the business, but at the same time, I don't think I've actually ever watched a match of his.
No, it's crazy.
But it is the legendary, and he is legendary. He's been in the business a long time, and that is Ox Baker. And he had his own little table there and his own booth, and it was good to see. It was good to see the old guy. So that was the autograph signings. But of all the kind of rundown merchandise that was at the tables, it felt like the people were pulling them out of their trunk.
Well, this is what I wanted to ask Andy. What was your favorite merchandise piece before we get into what Scott purchased?
Yes,
Andy. what was your favorite merchandise piece that was there?
The old posters were pretty great, especially the Benoit poster was my favorite.
Some of those tapes were pretty good too. And then what was the picture? There was a picture of
The picture of The Rock on a Saturday Night Live set or something like that.
That wasn't bad, but it wasn't one I said I wanted you to buy me. It was like someone stupid. It was like some random guy.
Oh, what the fuck? Oh, I can't remember.
It wasn't the Hurricane. It was like some random dude from like the mid-2000s they had a promo picture of. It was just the most ridiculous guy you would ever want to buy a picture of.
That's funny.
All right. Well, anyway, Scott purchased two posters. Scott, what should you tell us about them?
I poached and I put it up this morning. I bought a old school, probably what, 96?
Yes, 96.
95, 96 Four Horsemen poster from WCW. It's Ric Flair, Mongo, Arn, and Chris Benoit. So... So I can find plenty of people to either think that's cool or find it horribly offensive, but I guess that depends on your point of view.
Yes, definitely a creepy as hell.
But I don't care. It's a cool poster.
And it is a pretty sweet poster.
Yes. And another sweet poster we got, which we're going to award to our good friend Jim in a couple of months, was a sweet Randy Savage NWO. I don't know if it's Wolfpack. Or I think it was just regular.
No, just NWO. Yep.
Hollywood, yeah. NWO Savage poster, which we're going to give to our good man, our good friend Jim. At Thanksgiving, so, but yeah, the tape collection was good. Most of the stuff we both own.
It was all stuff a lot from the Attitude Era tapes.
Yeah, stuff. Like I said, it looked like stuff people had kept in their trunks, but that they carry around with them from indie show to indie show. But it was kind of neat, and people were, you know, there was a couple of foam belts, and you know, nothing earth shattering or crazy, but it was fun. That's kind of the highlights for me of those indie shows, is to find just random crazy junk. And two posters for $6. I can't argue with it. So
nope. So then we went inside, and unfortunately from the end of UF 10, not a lot of it was a passionate crowd, but not a lot of people were there. It was probably I think you counted about what 118 were in the building there.
At one point it was 118. I would say all told, after a while it probably maybe peaked at 130.
Yeah.
But that's probably about it.
All right. So we grabbed seats that were. Of course, they had the two ringside rows and then a little gap, and we were in the first row of raised seats. So
yes.
We had a pretty good spot. We were kind of near the aisle. I don't have all the results in front of me. I'm trying to look and see if they have.
Let's put it this way. Of all the guys on the autograph stand, Tony Atlas won his match.
Yes. Tony Atlas fought the East Coast Cowboy, DJ Dubai, and he had his creepy little freaking...
His little friend there.
Boy toy with him. That might have been the creepiest moment of the night. Andy, how'd you feel about that guy?
I still really want to know what the storyline was there, because if it was his boyfriend, that's kind of hilarious. But if it's not, then it was just like creepy on so many levels.
Right. It was just a little skinny guy with like a wife beater jeans, a cowboy hat, and a bandana around his mouth. So it was odd. And Tony Atlas had some guy named Bull Montana with him, who's just some fat looking Guido. Had a white polo shirt, big stretch pants, and a little kind of hats I call it,
those Italian hats, the not fedoras, the other ones, derbies?
Beret? A beret. It's a backwards like beret. And then we talked to Bull after, and he was a slobbering mess. So, he won that match. And then, you know, the matches early on are basic. Tony Atlas was entertaining. He did his little shtick, and he was good. But then we had the longest segment of the night. That was the most convoluted mess. And even the guys, we talked to the guys involved in the promotion, not even they knew what the fuck was going on. Dillon Cage, who was a weird, creepy-looking guy, pretty good mic skills, though, I thought.
Yes, very good mic skills with the creepy white... he had the Kane-esque white, but very bright white contact lenses.
So he comes out and he says he's got a gift for his Uncle Percy. Of course, that's Paul Bearer. So Paul Bearer comes out and, you know, he does his thing. You could tell he was loving the live crowd reaction. So they do a little thing in the ring and he gives Paul an urn. And that was the gift he had for him. And then the owner of the promotion, who is also a commentator, and I'm already drawing a blank on his name, which probably
would Eric.
It's not Eric Ardulo. Eric something else.
We kind of wish it was.
Yeah. So Eric comes out and they have this whole convoluted storyline going on where Dillon Cage owns a promotion and he's moving it to North Carolina because that's where he's from and they're leaving Boston and he took Eric's kids and they're going to fight in March in a street fight. And I don't know. It was very, very, I just could not follow. It was like Vince Russo on crack, really. It was like there's 18 different stipulations and then John Cena's dad, the great Johnny Fabulous, makes a surprise appearance, comes out through the crowd, and apparently he used to be the commissioner, and he still had the power to make certain decrees, and they go over this whole thing, and they end up making the match, and he's going to be the referee for their match, at Street Fight, at their show in March in Melrose, which looks to be maybe their last show in Massachusetts. I'm not sure if that's part of the angle, and no one seemed to know, so. But the whole thing was a real mess.
Yeah, it's called Soul Survivor 8.
Okay,
and that's the show in March. It's March 20. It's Saturday, March 24th, in the same building.
So, and then, of course, that led into the match we were there to see, and that was John Walters against Low Ki. And John, who is the ultimate heel, loved that we got in his face in the aisle. We have some good videos. I don't think they're on the Place to Be page or on my page. So if you want to check them out, just friend me, Justin Rosero, and you can check them out.
Yep.
So we were heckling him throughout the whole match, throwing a lot of inside jokes. But Andy, what did you think of the actual match itself?
I mean, it was good. They, like John said, you know, you're not going to go out and kill yourself for 118 people, but, you know, they still tell a good story up there.
I agree, and it looked stiff as hell. Low Ki was really chopping the shit out of him, and John said it wasn't as stiff as it looked, but it definitely looked like it hurt, and John's chest was pretty broken up and red.
Yeah, it was. But, so, you know, Low Ki's a pro, and they got the job done, so they put on a good match.
All right, so then we hit the intermission, and we actually missed the next couple of matches. We missed the Boogeyman because we were outside talking to John and doing some of the bumps you've heard with John Cena's dad. And actually, we got to tell a story about Ox Baker first. Go ahead, Scott. I'll let you tell that.
Well, during the intermission, we went out to where we were talking about the autograph table. Yeah, the foyer, the front of the Memorial Hall, where the autograph tables and the merchandise were. And I kept telling Justin, I've been saying, I'm like, you know what, the guy, he lives in Connecticut, not near me, way up in the northeast corner, actually near the Rhode Island line. And I'd said, you know, I know who he is, but I've never seen, he was in Escape from New York. He's been in movies, actually. But I've never actually met the guy. I've never watched any of his matches, but I think it'd be neat to get a picture with Ox Baker. And Justin goes, well, why don't you do it? But, you know, you don't want to walk up. The guy's got a table full of stuff. He's 77 years old. You know, you don't want to just take a picture and leave, you know. So I felt obligated to buy something. So his buddy there, the guy with the white beard, kind of looked like Tennessee Lee with a beard, or, you know, Colonel Parker, was telling me, and everything was $10. And Ox was talking, and so I bought the awesome shirt that says and we saw the shirt earlier on. Somebody was wearing it. It was green. They didn't have that one. It was like a powder blue. It just says wrestling legend Ox Baker, and it's got him with his big – it's a drawing of him with his big bushy mustache. And I bought a picture for him to sign, him with his patented bullwhip in his mouth. I don't know when the picture was from, probably late 70s. And we said, oh, Ox, I'd love to take a picture with you. And he says, all right. And so we, you know, I – squatted down and took a picture with him. He was sitting down, and then Justin, he goes, oh, is that your buddy? He points to Justin. I said, yeah, it's my co-host. He goes, oh, don't you come over here too. And you came over, and you
got a shaky picture, thanks to you.
Yeah, well,
old man Shakes McGee over there.
Yeah, well, you know what? I'm sorry, I'm not rich and can deal with the iPhone picture. Sorry, I have regular cell phones.
It's like a camera. You can't hold it steady. It has nothing to do with
the iPhone. I've never been good at taking pictures. Never. So,
well, that is a list of things.
So now, never trust me with it again, and then you don't have to worry about it. You should have had like the boogeyman take it with.
No,
his little...
I should have had the bodyguard Andrew Flanagan take it. That's what.
Yeah, well, you know what? Ox says he's ugly, so he doesn't want him in the.
He's
picture,
too busy
so.
Schlepping around all your merchandise and your other shit that you kept throwing on.
Well, you know, but you know what? He didn't want. You know, he wasn't allowed the picture. Okay, Ox said he was ugly, and what are you gonna do? Argue with him? He'll bull whip you. So, but yeah, so it was cool to meet the Ox, and
then of course, then I asked him. I said, you know, we do a podcast. Would you mind doing a little thing for us? And he gladly did it. And right on cue, just like he was cutting a promo back in the '60s or something.
It was very cool.
And you guys heard that Monday Night's Vault. So,
yeah.
So that was neat. So then we went outside. We talked to John, and we got a few other bumps from some other wrestlers. And, of course, the one you heard earlier, John Cena's dad, who was an awesome, awesome guy. So nice.
Yes.
And he actually told us he wants to come on for an interview. So we're going to set that up eventually and talk to him. He's a very interesting guy, as, of course, he runs big-time wrestling, and he's big in the Northeast indie scene. So,
yes.
Cool, guys. So we missed a couple matches. We made it back in for the second half of the six-man Drag Me to Hell War. That was Abyss, Todd Hansen, and Demon Luis Ortiz with Ox Baker in their corner against Stalker Dillon Cage, who was just a creepy-looking guy. Rick Fuller and the Executioner Malonis with Paul Bearer in their corner. And as we speak, the Yankees have just taken a lead.
The guy's name is it's Dan Marotti.
Oh, Dan Marotti. Okay, not
Dan
Eric.
Marotti. He's the guy that runs he's a commentator, but he's technically the guy that runs the company.
So. Right, so possibly Jorge Posada's final Yankee Stadium moment here. Just knocked in two runs. So it's a 4-2 bottom eight. But okay,
they say that JBL is a manager.
Yeah, well, that's coming up. So anyway, the Abyss situation. Todd Hansen was injured or something. We missed that part. He came out halfway through the match, and then that team ended up winning. And Abyss is just a huge, huge guy in person when you see him.
Yeah,
close.
He's a big dude. Yep.
And the main event saw the MWF Heavyweight Champion Slick Wagner Brown. Of JBL's uprising, of course, we were filled in later that JBL cut a promo one time, and since then they've run with it, saying that he manages this group or something. So, and he defended against Straight Edge Brian Fury, who's the TV champion. Tony Garea was a special timekeeper. Mm-hmm. Slick Wagner Brown retained his title, and then a big brawl broke out, and the locker room emptied. There was a huge brawl with all the guys, and then John Cena's dad came out and ended up making a match between Slick. Well, Slick started choking him out, and then Low-Key made the save, and they had a title match on the spot, and Low-Key won the MWF title to close out the show. So that brought an end to the show itself, and afterwards, we were hanging around waiting to meet John, because we were going to go out to dinner with him and a few other guys, and there was an interesting security guard hanging out. This big guy, he probably weighed, what, 4 bills, probably? 3.5?
Yeah, oh yeah, definitely 4 bills. Absolutely.
And he had a big walking boot, so I guess his foot was all fucked up. And he's basically just telling us all these embellished stories like you'd expect. And he kept calling all the fans mocks. And he's like, get these mocks out of here. Get these fucking mocks out of here.
Yeah.
They can't go backstage. All these fucking... And then there were these two Asian-American females hanging around because one of the Asian wrestlers, of course, they were with him.
Yes. That wrestler is... I have the roster in front of me. It was Sunny E 2000. Yes.
Yeah, Sunny E 2000. The Lost Techno Team 2000 member. But
yes.
So the guy was like, these chicks want to go backstage. They're not getting backstage. I don't care if they suck me off. They're not getting backstage. And we're like, yeah, okay, that's their dream in life is to give you a blowjob, you fat,
pretty
fat
much.
Fucking pig. And,
yeah, exactly.
And he was just ridiculous. He thought everyone wanted to go backstage and just, you know, tell us about how all these stupid mocks all hang around. And it was just embarrassing. I was embarrassed for the guy. He was so pathetic. And, of course, there was the funny security guard there. Who really, you could tell, didn't know anything about wrestling, but was kind of curious about it. And he looked like Ron Swanson from Parks and Recreation. And he, you know, he saw a guy with a shirt over his head or was it a ski mask? He had a ski. It was the
boogeyman. He had it almost looked like a black doctor's mask. It was just like covering up his nose and mouth. It wasn't covering his eyes.
Right. So he had that on and he's like, who's the guy with the mask? Is that the boogeyman? Why is he wearing a mask? You know, he's like all concerned about it. And so that was pretty funny. And then Tony Atlas left. We talked to him for a few minutes. He was walking out. And
I opened the door for him. I was honored. It was a privilege to open the door for a Hall of Famer.
Yeah,
so.
We said hi to Tony Garea. That was cool. And then we ended up going to grab dinner at the most interesting, and I'm going to let Andy tell about this place, the most interesting Asian restaurant I've ever been to, Kowloon's in Saugus, Mass. Andy, tell us a little bit about this place.
I think as you described it, it looked like the, you know, a 70s movie Chinese restaurant that all the mobsters would meet up in.
Yeah, they had a band playing and singing, and it was just like all the weird motifs, and it was just a huge, huge building.
It was shaped like a ship. It had like a whole boat motif.
Yeah, there was a weird nautical theme going on there with like the steering wheel for the boat and all these boats hanging from the rafters.
Yeah, it's kind of like a, I guess the Chinese coastline version of a restaurant. But so we went in, we walked in, we went to dinner with John and Eddie Ryan, who's a British wrestler. Did I get that right? Eddie Ryan, right?
Yes, it's Eddie Ryan.
And then the ring announcer, who was Rich, I can't forget.
Palladino.
He was a really nice guy. Yeah. So we went out to dinner with the three of them. We walked in, we saw John Cena Sr. was hanging out, waiting for his crew. We talked to him for another few minutes, and that's when he offered to be on the show. That was really nice of him.
Yes.
Just a really, really cool guy.
He is a really great guy. He really is. Yes.
So it was cool, this bullshit with the guys. We had some Chinese food. It was kind of a mess. They brought it out all over the place, and poor Eddie Ryan waited forever for his sweet and sour meat.
Sweet and sour mystery meat.
But of course,
it was chicken or pork.
The most surreal part was waiting for, looking over, and the rest of the crew, the owner and all the guys that he flew in and the other wrestlers were all eating at a big table across from us. And it's just kind of surreal to look up. And hey, there's Paul Bearer eating, you know, sticky wings, and there's, you know, low key eating fried rice. So it was just really surreal to just look up
crazy.
At Carlito and all these guys, and just kind of cool. And then on the way out, we talked to Ric Fuller, who we met last time, and he's a nice guy as well. And Abyss walked by us, and I was taking a picture with John, and he walked in front of us by accident, and he's just mammoth guy. So
he really is just a legitimately big dude. I mean, it's just big, thick, big dude, and he walks around. He'd have his mask on. And he was just like, hey, guys, what's going on? And, you know, it's just so laid back. It was the perfect situation of an indie show in the sense that nobody felt above you. Like, you know, nobody felt like, oh, I don't know, who am I hanging around with these guys for? You know, like, everybody was just so cool. And it was a lot of fun. It was really good.
We definitely want to get Rich on, the announcer, because he actually has done some ECW Ring of Honor stuff as well. And it looks like he had some cool stories, and he said he'd come on and chat with us. So we have a couple of guys lined up now. And if you get a chance to go to an indie show like this, we were talking about this at the show. Andy and I have been to a few together, and it's just a lot of fun. You know, you're not going to see a ton of great action, but you get to sit up close and a lot of unique characters, and just kind of brings you back to maybe why you like this business in the first place. So I'm sure both of you guys agree it was definitely worth the trip and the $20.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. There's no doubt about it. I mean, and Kowloon's is one of those, it must be a place that people have gone to for years. It's like the wrestling hangout after the fact.
Oh, yeah, there were a ton of pictures.
There were pictures all over the wall, and the food was very good. It's a really cool place.
Yeah,
and
I had the rest of that lo mein for lunch the next day, and it was actually, I wanted more of it. I was like, oh, this is pretty good.
No, the food was great. The company was good. Everybody just was so laid back, just talking about stuff. And, you know, I'm actually pretty proud of ourselves, the three of us, because, you know, we could have been Max, as Chunko there was saying. You know, we could have walked up, so tell me about, what's Undertaker like? And what was it like? How's Primo? And what's it like with your dad? And, you know, like, we're like a bunch of fucking morons. And we didn't. It's just like, you know, it's just cool. These guys are laid back and just having a good time, and they come to you. See, I've noticed that now over the few shows, indie shows that we've been to. These people just want to hang out with other cool people, and they don't mind wrestling fans. They don't even mind marks, but just don't be such an embarrassment to yourself. You know, just kind of be chill and hang out and ask questions that are legitimately intelligent, and they'll let it roll with you. Like, they'll open up to you if you just...
Well, it helps, too. I
respect,
mean,
you know?
It helps, too, like I do with Steve Richards, that we are friends with John, and John's very open. And honest and a good friend. So, you know, he kind of vouches for us wherever we go. So
yes, that does help too.
Yeah, and he's a good guy. So that was a lot of fun. And, of course, MWF has a pretty loyal fan base. I was looking at the Facebook page, and some of the people that we saw at the building, I recognized they put pictures up, and they were talking about the show, how much they loved the show. So
the guy
it's just cool
the guy
to see them.
Was the guy with the bottle of milk on the page?
No, the girl with the Armageddon 04 shirt was, though.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's right.
So it was just cool to see have such a loyal fan base for indie wrestling, so... So we'll leave it at that. If you guys want to check out the pictures, there's a ton of them on our Facebook page. I'm sorry if you were overwhelmed in your newsfeed with them Saturday night, but I figured I'd throw them up for you. So check that out and let us know if you're interested in seeing those videos. And other than that, I think it's time to move on to some Curb. So
actually, before we do Curb, there's one thing that I thought was very funny. It was one poignant moment. Rich Palladino, he looks down and he goes, I can't believe he just did that. And we're all like, what are you talking about? We turn around. While he's waiting for his food... Slick Wagner Brown's at the table. I guess it was his girlfriend or his wife. He actually tweets that he's going to get back his MWF Heavyweight Championship. And then his food comes. It's like so funny. Like he's continuing the storyline while he's sitting there waiting for his chow mein or whatever. It's just, I don't know. It was just funny. And Rich is like, I can't believe he just tweeted.
Well, yeah, they're ragging on him a little bit as kind of taking himself a little too seriously. So.
Yeah, well, he also, take himself seriously and he forgets his tights.
Yeah,
so
true.
The guy's going to wrestle in his jeans, but he still put on a good match. How do you forget your tights? I mean, John was saying that this guy wrestles like almost every indie show. Now, how do you forget your tights?
I don't know if that was ever confirmed, though. Maybe he just wrestled in jeans. I don't know.
Maybe he does wrestle in jeans. Who knows?
All right. So let's talk about Curb. Last time we talked to Andy, I think it was after, the second episode?
Yeah.
Okay.
I thought it was before the season started, but yeah, okay.
I feel like we had watched at least one episode. Maybe not, though.
But I'll say this, though. I was talking to our friend Mike last week, and the only person I ever really talk about Curb with is you guys. But he even said it himself. He totally agrees with you, Justin. You've said it more than a few times on this program that this past season of Curb apparently may have been some of the best episodic sitcom television in the last few years.
Oh, without a doubt. And Andy, because you've seen all the Curb episodes like I have. Is this the best season?
I think it's too soon to say, but I did go back and refresh my memory about what actually happened this season, and it went on like just a tremendous run there.
It's amazing. And I mean, I think it's the second season, which was also really good. Crazy Eyes Killer and all that stuff. Very good season. And the season 6 with the Blacks obviously was very good. But I think this was the most consistently good season, where even the worst episode is probably top 20 all time.
Which the worst episode was? I don't even know.
I was going to read through them quick, actually, and maybe we can try and decide. So we have the opener was the divorce. And that could be in the running maybe for the worst of the season, but it had the great Girl Scout thing with her putting the tampon in and everything.
Yep.
Which was tremendous.
What? Girl Scouts and tampons?
We can't even explain it. You just got to watch it. It's just,
oh, my God.
Yeah. The next one was The Safe House with the abusive woman and Richard Lewis's burlesque girlfriend, which is also very good. Palestinian Chicken obviously was great. That's where Larry first is titled The Social Assassin. And, of course, they have all the issues where he crosses the border from the Jews to the Palestinians. The Smiley Face. I'm trying to remember all of that one.
It's the one with the cabinets and the break room at work.
Okay, that's right. And that's where they make up the idea that they lie to say that he has somewhere to go, right?
No, that's later.
Okay, that's the next one.
Yeah, that's the one with the
Vow of Silence.
Hans and the girlfriend and the... What else?
Well, the next one's the Vow of Silence.
Deep thing.
Yeah, that one is where Jeff's dog is denied the last meal because they eat the ice cream on it.
That's right.
And then the guy tells the truth at the end. Because then the next one, he's in New York, is when the great episode in the subway.
Yep.
Where on the plane, they think Larry saved the guy who was abusing the stewardess, but he accidentally tripped. And then at the end, he ends up beating up the guy in the subway while Ricky Gervais. That's all the stuff with Ricky Gervais. And, of course, those are some cringeworthy scenes between the two of them. Then, of course, I think maybe my favorite one is the bisexual with him competing with Rosie O'Donnell for the same woman.
Mm-hmm.
And he has all the issues with the Japanese guy at the Japanese restaurant. Then, I don't know, this may also be my favorite, the car periscope, which is just awesome. And, of course, Wanda Sykes makes her a glorious return. And that, if you haven't seen it, is all the... And I'm just going to interrupt right now. Rafael Soriano just closed out the game, and the Yankees are your 2011 AL East champions, as predicted by your boy, not your old man, who predicted the Red Sox to win the AL East.
Well, maybe plan, because usually I never pick them, so
all right.
There you go.
Whatever. AL East champs, there you go.
Like you were going to pick anybody else, really.
I defended it, though. I didn't
say you picked the Orioles to win the division. I mean, come on.
Yeah, but I could have picked the Red Sox like 99% of the other population. Like, everybody on ESPN picked them.
No.
Anyway, Cop Periscope was good, and of course that has the tremendous... I'm sorry. That's the next one. Mr. Softy, which also could be argued as the best of the season, where the ice cream truck theme triggers some painful memories for Larry, and of course he has the car with the shaky seat, which may be the most disturbing scene of all time.
Yes.
And then the finale, of course, was Michael J. Fox, where Larry accused him of using his Parkinson's to harass him. So, and of course, the pre-gay little boy, which may be the funniest child actor of all time. So they really went out strong. I didn't think the Michael J. Fox thing was as funny as I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, I think I had too high expectations for that.
I think the problem is that storyline would have been hilarious, like on any other show. But you just expect Larry to do that, and he's done so much worse that it really wasn't that out of control for him. So, but the gay kid saved it, and Jeff taking the bullet for Susie was funny too.
That was good.
And of course, episode 9, Mr. Softy, is also the awesome Bill Buckner one.
Oh, that's right.
With all that, that was tremendous. So kudos for him for taking all that ribbing. He was great.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't know what the worst. I mean, I'd probably
probably the smiley face, right?
Yeah, that had to be it.
And even that was really good.
Yeah, I'm still trying to remember all of that one, but I know what you're saying. It's one with the cabinets, and then what was the smiley face part about?
That was the one where he was dating the girl at the restaurant that they liked.
That's right, where he shits reeds.
Yeah, and he broke up with her basically because she uses emoticons when she texts.
That's right. Yeah, I'd say that was probably the worst, and maybe the first one outside of the Girl Scout part.
Yeah.
But the rest was just phenomenal stuff, phenomenal stuff. And this is the first time now that he hasn't kind of hedged about coming back. So I'm hoping that means he's definitely coming back. Did you notice this season? I think we talked about this briefly, but this was really the first season where I felt they focused a lot like on long segments of dialogue and not the quick scenes that they use a lot of times.
I didn't notice that. I kind of thought of this as kind of a dialogue heavy show. Like it's mostly about the interaction between two people talking. You know what I mean?
I guess, but I feel like they had longer ones this time. Maybe I'm just thinking of the Ricky Gervais where those scenes seem to go on forever, and a lot of the Rosie ones as well. It seemed like they leaned more on Larry's interaction with other people, I guess, and not as much as their other. I think a big part of it is Cheryl not being on anymore.
Well, that's true, yeah.
And there was no Ted Danson, not as much Richard Lewis, not as much Funkhauser, sadly. He was in a lot early, but...
Yeah.
So I think that was a big part of it.
He's too busy being on Raw.
That's true.
He couldn't be on the second half of the season.
So I think a big part of it was that they relied more on Larry's interaction with other new people. So maybe that's why it felt that way.
Right. It was a very, like, guest star heavy season. Yeah. So, you know, we got to give those people screen time.
Yeah. Yeah, Rosie. The Rosie thing was phenomenal.
Yeah, she was great.
All right, so yeah, I mean, I guess there's really not much else to say to really break down. I mean, it was just a tremendous, tremendous season.
I think the only other thing I wanted to say is that, you know, you already said it, but between Palestinian Chicken and the bisexual, I think those are the two of the classic episodes.
You know what I love about this conversation? If somebody just walked in the middle of it and you said something about Palestinian chickens and bisexuals, I wonder. I don't even know if they would stay on any longer. But
I honestly think Mr. Softy might have been the best of the season, though.
Yeah, we're going to rewatch that one.
Bill Buckner was awesome. The stuff with the Mr. Softy truck and Leon stealing the fucking ball at the end. Where he's like, he gave you the ball? He's like, nah, I fucking stole it. And Leon, by the way, genius to have him go to New York with Larry. That was tremendous. I hate to say booking, but it was tremendous booking. Because Leon is awesome, and he was just great. The scene where he's yelling at the guy on the phone, and then Larry comes in and he hangs up. Oh, how do we forget about the bisexual one was the great, also had the great Viagra storyline where Larry's juicing to win the girl. And then the best scene ever is when he goes to Central Park to buy the Viagra. They show all these different drug dealers and there's some old guy there making out with a young girl and he buys the fucking Viagra from him. I laughed forever. So now maybe that one is my favorite. I don't know. I can't narrow it down.
Yeah.
It's just so, if you don't watch Kirby Enthusiasm, you should watch. And if you haven't... Watch it from the beginning, but if you have to just pick one season, this newest season is just unreal. It was just...
Well, the good thing is there have been plenty of seasons, so when I do start watching from the beginning, by the time I get to it, it'll be on there. So.
Well, the thing, too, is they're quick to burn through. I mean, they're a full half hour, but there's only 10 episodes a season, so
right.
And it's not a huge time commitment to burn.
Did you guys miss Cheryl? I think she's hot. I kind of like her, so I don't know.
I missed the less than I thought it would, to be honest with you. Yeah. I guess there was just so much going on, I kind of forgot.
Yeah, I remember the first episode, I was kind of sad that she wasn't going to be on anymore, because I thought they were going to have him get back together, but single Larry is pretty awesome.
Yeah.
And the things he does, so I was kind of fine with it. I'd rather have Leon as his wife, basically, which is what he was, than Cheryl, because Leon is just way funnier than Cheryl, so I was perfectly fine with it. And we've had plenty, you know, we had 70 episodes of Cheryl, pretty much, so I think we pretty much did everything we could with that. So, all right. So there you go. Right. It's Kirby Enthusiasm. Andy, you want to stay on and do NFL picks with us?
Sure.
All right. Quickly, I guess we pretty much talked about baseball throughout the show, but the Yankees have won the AL East. And I'm just going to pull up the standings really quick. Let's just give an update where we're at. Because next week is actually, surprisingly enough, the final week of the season. The playoffs actually start next Friday, surprisingly enough. I can't believe it.
Wow.
That is crazy.
So the Yankees have won the division. Boston's now 8 out, finished off. They lost. They're 3-7 the last 10. They've lost 3 out of 4 to Baltimore, which is abysmal.
Ouch.
Tampa Bay is 2 back in the loss column, and so are the Angels in the wild card. They are just on fire. The thing with the Angels, though, they scare me. I'd almost rather have the Red Sox make it than the Angels, because if the Angels make it, the Yankees get them in the first round, most likely. And they scare the shit out of me with those three pitchers in a short series. Herron, Weaver, and Santana. And
Irvin Santana. I'll tell you, the Yankee lineup is also prone to slumps. Although in this last few years, the Yankee lineup never slumps in the postseason. Not completely. You'll have one or two guys that don't hit. But
The two guys that need to hit this postseason that haven't the last couple are Teixeira and Swisher. Those two guys have to step up finally.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. But, you know, the Angel bullpen is not that good. I mean, it's okay. I think if the Yankees can get to that, have to play the Angels in the division series, they could probably, I think they'll eke out a series win just based on the fact that guys could get hot. And it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Well, the good thing is they pretty much have home field locked up at this point. They're 5 ahead of Texas and Detroit. Right now, Detroit is ahead by half a game. Texas is still playing, so I think they're going to be tied again after tonight from there. So we'll see. The wild card's going to come down to the last few days. Now, the Yankees are probably going to lay off a little bit now they get the division clinched, so I wouldn't be surprised if Tampa wins tomorrow. And then, you know, we go off from there. The Boston comes in. So be curious. In the NL, Philly obviously has the East locked up. Milwaukee's got the Central. They're up 4, and Arizona is the magic number of 2. Now, the Giants are red hot. They lost tonight, but they've fought all the way back. And they're in the wild card picture, but unlikely. But do you know, did you see if the Mets won? Did they end up winning?
Let me take a look.
They must have lost, because St. Louis is now 1 back in the loss column, which is very aggravating. So Atlanta only has a 1-game lead on the wild card. So the divisions are pretty much all done, and the wild cards are up for grabs. So we'll leave that there. And next week, we'll have a better picture of the playoffs so we can do a little bit more of a preview. So, with that said, I'm going to hand it over to the PIC because it's officially time for the Week 3 NFL picks.
Yep. Where is it? All right. Week 2, just to recap the record last week, I went 13-3. My only three losses were the Ravens, who disappointedly played lousy in their loss to Tennessee.
I feel like we should have seen that coming, honestly.
And, yeah. I picked the Cardinals, who lost by a point to Washington, and I picked the Broncos, who lost. I picked the Bengals, who fought late and maybe could have pulled that game out, but they end up losing by just 2.
Yeah.
To the Broncos. So I went 13-3. Was that your record too?
I am not sure. I can check.
Take a check. So for 2 weeks, my record is 21-11 after 2 weeks.
I have 19-13 overall.
So you finished. I could say one. Which means you finished 11-5 because we both went 8-8 last week.
Yeah, 11-5. Yep.
So 11-5. So my record 21-11. And
I got Baltimore wrong, Cincinnati wrong. I picked Miami and Atlanta and the Rams.
Okay. You mean you picked Philadelphia?
Philadelphia. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Week number 3 of the NFL season. No buys yet. Everybody's playing. We don't have buys for a couple weeks. We begin week number 3 at the Superdome in New Orleans. These are the 1 o'clock games. We've got, 8 total. We begin at the Superdome in New Orleans, where the Saints, coming off a nice home win over the Chicago Bears, host the Houston Texans, who are at 2-0, coming off a win at Miami. It's a pretty good game, but I got to take the Saints at home. I like Houston a lot. This is going to be a very close game. You're going to have 2 quarterbacks, Matt Schaub, Drew Brees, both throwing the ball very well right now. But I'm going to take the Saints at home.
Me too. I think this is the game we finally see what the Texans are made of. Arian Foster looks like he's going to be out another week. Ben Tate's going to be the guy there. And I can't see them going into New Orleans and winning. They don't really need to. That division is kind of shaky right now as it is. So
yeah, exactly.
That's not really a must win. It's more of a must win for the Saints, who need to keep the pressure on. And I don't see Drew Brees losing to them at home. How about you, Andy?
Yeah, I agree. I don't really believe in the Saints defense, but I think at home they'll have enough to win.
Okay, so a clean sweep on the Saints. We move on to Lincoln Financial Field in Philadelphia, where the Mean Green Nightmare team finally have their home opener as the Eagles host the New York Football Giants. Eagles coming off that loss, and could be Michael Vickless this week against the Giants, but they lost to the Falcons, and Vic got hurt. Giants played Monday night. Quickly, Andy, did you watch? I'm sure, being the Giant fan, I'm sure you watched the game Monday night. How did you think they looked in the win over the Rams?
Well, I mean, it was a fun game to watch because everything went right for them, but, you know, for to have everything go right and only win by, what was it, 12?
12, yep.
Yeah. It's not a great sign, but again, I enjoyed the game, so I can't really complain.
Okay.
Well,
so to me,
whole game turns when the guy on the Rams muffed that punt.
Yeah, because, Cadillac?
Yeah,
oh, no.
No, it wasn't Cadillac. It was
I thought you meant the fumble that was returned for a touchdown.
Well, that pissed me off, too, because that lazy son of a bitch just watched the guy fucking run by him. But, no, the punt early that the guy muffed and the Giants recovered, like, on the 35, and they ended up scoring.
That killed a lot of momentum, yeah.
Yeah, if you hold them there, they had just got a field goal, they held them to three and out, and they would have been driving again. And they were really shredding up the Giants secondary. So, to me, that turned the whole game around.
Okay,
and now
so
Hickson's out for the year, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Mm. Well, even without Michael Vick, even if, what's his name? What's the Buka?
Kafka.
I knew it had Kafka as the will probably start a quarterback. Vince Young is not ready yet. I don't see the Eagles losing.
No, they're saying Vic's going to play, so I'm not sure.
We'll see. Well, he's got a tender neck, but if Vic plays, then the Eagles should have no problems winning this game at home.
Yeah, I think with or without Vic, the Giants just really don't have much this year.
Yeah, I'm taking the Eagles as well. I agree. Okay. I think the Giants are going to have a tough season. They'll still win their 7-9 games, but this is not one of them.
Okay, so a clean sweep for the Eagles. We move on to Bank of America Stadium in Charlotte, North Carolina, where we could very well see Cam Newton throw for 400 yards for the third straight week.
Unreal.
As his Panthers host the Jacksonville Jaguars, who were a complete train wreck as they as the Jets just pimp-slapped them from one end of the field to the other on Sunday. While the Panthers gave the defending world champions a pretty good scare, but Aaron Rodgers and the Packers persevered for the win. I'm taking Carolina. Blaine Gabbert makes his first NFL start. I'm sure he'll get his throws down, but, I mean, this is amazing. We're going to see, the top two picks in the draft, right? Right? Wasn't Gabbert
No,
number
he
two?
Was a number two, was he?
Was
no.
He? No, he was a little further down. They were the top two quarterbacks, so. Jake Locker, I guess. But two of the top young quarterbacks in the league going head-to-head. Carolina gets their first win of the year on Sunday. I think Cam Newton will play good enough to win. Panther defense seems to be playing a little frisky. To use a JR euphemism, Jacksonville's just a train wreck right now. Defensively, offensively, nothing's working for them right now. I'm taking Carolina at home.
I'm not sure that's quite a euphemism. I'm not sure it would be a euphemism for it, but I like I like Carolina too. They're not going to be able to really run as well in Jacksonville, because even as we saw, the Jets had our time with that. But I think Cam Newton's going to throw for a shitload of yards because Jacksonville's secondary is atrocious. And Blaine Gabbert, he'll play okay, but I think Carolina at home wins this one easily.
Next up, Andy, your thoughts? Carolina? Well, I was waiting for him to say something. He just fired out, and he didn't do it, so go ahead. What do you think?
Sorry about that. I'm pretty sure that Cam Newton's going to fall back to earth pretty soon, but I'd rather bet on him than Blaine Gabbert, so I'll go with Carolina.
Okay. You know, Oxbaker might want a picture with you if you maybe get your answer out quick enough, okay?
I'll work on it.
Next up, and this is one of the more intriguing matchups of Week 3, Ralph Wilson Stadium in Buffalo. The Bills hosting the New England Patriots, the Pats' their second road game of the year. But this is probably their first true test, but as much as I really, really want to, I can't pick against Tom Brady right now. The guy's throwing the ball all over the place. Offensive line's giving him protection. Fitzpatrick's going to face his first real tough, I could say tough defense because the Pats' defense has been pretty hideous, at least their pass defense the first 2 weeks. But I can't see Buffalo's defense stopping Brady. I think it's going to be a high-scoring game. I think Buffalo will hang around for a while, but I like the Pats on the road.
Yeah, me too. I mean, you're not going to pick against New England here against Buffalo. No matter how good strong Buffalo's look, they still took them a last-second play to beat Oakland at home. They'll get a touchdown late garbage, and only because New England's secondary is a lot worse than a lot of delusional Patriots fans are accepting at this point. They think they're this lights-out, world-beating defense, but they've given up 400 yards back-to-back weeks to Miami and San Diego. So, I don't see New England losing this. I think Buffalo will probably put up 24 points, but I think New England puts up like 38-41. So,
Andy, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree with both New England.
And Aaron Hernandez is out for a few weeks as well. So,
okay. Well, they'll still throw to Benjamin Watson, right? No, not Benjamin Watson.
Gronkowski.
Yeah, the other tight end. So and the receivers are all clicking on all cylinders. So we have a clean sweep for the Pats. I think it'll be a good game, but they'll win in Buffalo. Next. My favorite shaded coach. And man, let me tell you something. Watching him in the post-game press conference. I wear my sunglasses at night so I can. And that is, of course, Tony Sperano and his Miami Dolphins. Tony, let me tell you something. He has lost a boatload of weight since he was head coach of my beloved New Haven Chargers. Coaching the Dolphins probably does that to you. We are at Cleveland Browns Stadium in Cleveland, where the Browns will host the aforementioned Miami Dolphins in Miami's first road game of the season. Cleveland coming off a nice road win last week for the Indianapolis Colts. This is a toss-up for me. I got to go with the Browns at home. I think it'll be a close game. I think Chad Henne will get his yards. But I like Hillis running against that Dolphins defense. I'm taking Cleveland at home.
Torn here because I feel like I gave Miami my goodwill last week and they laid an egg against Houston. On the other hand, they seemed to play better on the road last year, much better than they were at home. Cleveland has been disappointing to me. Yeah, they beat Indianapolis, but Indianapolis is awful. And they shit the bed against Cincy week one. To me, this is pretty much a toss-up. And it depends. I don't know if I trust them to give the ball to Hillis like they should. You know, fuck it. I'm going to give Miami one more shot. On the road, I got to see them on the road before I can really write them off. Because last year they were good on the road. And I think Kenny bounces back. And I think they have a decent game. So I'll take Miami on the road there.
Okay. Andy, you break the tie. What do you think?
I agree. It's a toss-up. Miami is one of those teams that always loses when it seems like they should win. And it seems like they should win this one. So I'll go with the Browns.
All right, so two for the Browns.
Looted enough for you guys.
Two for the Browns, one for the Dolphins. Okay. Next up, as we continue to the 1 o'clock games, we go to Paul Brown Stadium in Cincinnati, where the surprisingly good Bengals, they've split their first two games, take on the San Francisco 49ers, where their heart's broken on Sunday against the Cowboys. You know what? I'm going to give Andy Dalton a shot here. I think he's thrown the ball very well. He played great against the Broncos. Niner defense is, particularly that secondary is a little shaky. I'm going to take the Bengals at home. Justin, what do you think?
The Bengals really are, if they could have stolen a game in Denver, they had a good shot of being 3-0 here and leading that division, surprisingly enough. Mm. And that would have been a good spot for them to be in, obviously. But San Fran, to me, they're the QB killers. They injured your boy Romo. They're known for wiping out quarterbacks. And Dalton could struggle. If this is in San Fran, I'd probably be taking the Niners. But, you know, the Bengals' offense has looked good, and I don't know. Alex Smith hasn't done much, and I can't say – since he's got a very good defense, actually. So I'm trying to pick a few underdogs here, but I think I like Cincy. That could change as the days go on, I think about it more. But as of right now, I'm going to go with the Bengals.
Okay. Andy, what do you think?
Yeah, I'll go with Cincy, mostly because they're at home.
Okay, so a sweep for the – a tentative sweep for the Bengals as they host San Francisco Sunday. Next up, we go to LP Field in Nashville, where the Titans will host the Denver Broncos, who I was flowering them with praise in week one, and they lay a bomb against the Raiders. Then I crap on them last week, and they beat Cincinnati. Tennessee coming off a very impressive win over a good Ravens team. I'm going to take the Titans at home again. I like the way that Hasselbeck threw the ball. Chris Johnson seemed to kind of get his legs under him again. I'm gonna take the Titans at home. Justin, what do you think?
Yeah, me too. I Hasselbeck threw for 350 on Baltimore. I can only imagine what he's gonna do to Denver, a team that Andy Dalton had a field day against. So, and I haven't seen much from Denver yet to really give them any reason to pick them here. And Tennessee's D pretty good at home, pretty solid at home. So I can see Denver struggling. I hate taking all these favorites, but I don't see Denver going down there and beating Tennessee.
Okay, Andy, what do you think?
Yeah, I don't think Tennessee is as good as they looked last week, but I believe in Denver even less, so Tennessee.
Okay. The final 1 o'clock game of the day might be my – I think I'm going to make this my lock of the week. And maybe I'm – I don't know if I'm hedging it or not, but we go to Mall of America Field, the former Metrodome in Minneapolis, where the Minnesota Vikings, who were booed off the field last week in their loss to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers as they were leading 17-0 in that game, and then let the whole thing go right down the toilet – I like or host a very, very talented, suddenly, Detroit Lions team. I'm taking the Lions in a blowout here. I think Minnesota's a mess. And I think that demoralizing loss is going to carry over this week. And I'm going to give Matthew Stafford the benefit of the doubt this week and take the Lions on the road. Justin, what do you think?
The Lions have looked awesome. I can see this being such a trap game coming from a mile away. I don't have the balls to take the Vikings, though, because they have been so bad. They just have no offense. They have no one to go downfield. McNabb can't throw it downfield. And outside of Peterson, who they can shut down with that Detroit front line, I just don't see Minnesota scoring many points. And Detroit just nearly dropped a double nickel on Kansas City. So I can see, I think this is going to get ugly early, and Detroit runs away with it and goes to 3-0.
I know. Andy, what do you think?
Yeah, he stole the words out of my mouth. It's got trap game written all over it, but I don't have the balls to pick him. So I don't pick
him. All right, so a sweep for the line. So Matthew Stafford, make us proud.
So that's your lock?
That's my lock of the week. Okay. I think Detroit's going to go in. I think they're going to blow out the Vikings. All right, let's move on now to the 4 o'clock. A lot of 4 o'clock games this week. 6 4 o'clock games, which is a lot. Usually there's no more than four, but 6 4 o'clock games this week. We'll begin at the Edward Jones Dome in St. Louis, where the Rams, who look pretty flat in their loss to the Giants on Monday night, host the Baltimore Ravens, who looked even flatter in their loss at Tennessee. This is a no-brainer for me. I like the Ravens to rebound here. I think Flacco will play well. I think the Ravens D will get shaken this week in practice, and I think they'll take out the Rams.
All right, this is probably stupid of me, but I picked the Rams to win this division. I have a lot of faith in them. They got to win at some point, and I think this is it. I think Baltimore is coming in, shaking off of that loss. If it's in Baltimore, there's no way I take the Rams. But the fact that they're going into St. Louis, I'm hoping it becomes a bit of a track meet. I think it'll be a little bit high-scoring game, and I feel like the Rams really could have won that Monday night game, and they still hung around despite all the stupid plays they had. They're a very sloppy team. And I need to see that these receivers can catch, by the way, for the fucking Rams. They drop more balls than anyone I've ever seen. So
they do.
I'm going to take the Rams as kind of a last-ditch effort here because they don't want to get to 0-3, 0-4. It's going to be hard to dig a hole, even though that division is sloppy anyway. There's not really a lot of – especially if the Niners lose that game. So I'm going to take the Rams, but this is pretty much the last week I'm going to take them against any kind of big game. So
okay. Andy, what do you think?
For me, it's pretty even. I'm going to go with Baltimore, though. It's just a kind of a gut feeling. I don't have anything to defend it.
Okay. Well, they played very well week one against a damn good Steeler team. So maybe last week was just an aberration, but we'll see. So a clean sweep for the Ravens. We move on to the Oakland Alameda County Coliseum, where we have one of the most enduring rivalries in all of professional football, dating back to the old AFL, the Heidi game, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The New York Jets and the Oakland Raiders. Oakland looked good, but of course could not close out the Buffalo Bills last week in Ralph Wilson Stadium. The Jets looked very good last week. This, however, looks like a trap game to me. But I don't have the balls to pick the Raiders. You guys looked very good on Sunday, your Jets, Justin. But I would not be surprised Oakland steals this one. But I'm going to take the Jets.
No, me neither. This game definitely scares me a little bit. Going out West Coast, Oakland can run. And they also have some deep threats. I'm not too worried about the passing game, though, with the Jets secondary. But the run game worries me a little bit. I can see McFadden having a big day. We'll see how Sanchez goes in there. You know, if they want to be a big boy team and be in the contenders, be top five, top three in the power rankings, they need to win this game. Because coming up next, they're at Baltimore and then at New England. So, two tough games. They can't drop this one and risk going to 2-3. And, you know, you hope that they steal one of those Baltimore-New England games, but they got to win this game. If they want to be a legit contender and be considered a top elite team in the league, you can't go to Oakland and lose. No matter how frisky Oakland is, no matter how well they've looked the first couple weeks, you just can't. You just cannot go out there and lose that game.
Right. Andy, what do you think?
Yeah, I guess the Raiders can run on the Jets, but I don't like the matchup of, you know, Jason Campbell against the Jets defense, so I'm going with the Jets.
Okay, so we have a clean sweep for the Jets, although I tell you, I am a little leery. I got to be honest with you, man. Justin, I'm feeling a little leery here, but this is a game they need to win because, again, they go to Baltimore next week, and then, of course, the first of two fist fights with the Patriots. So we'll see what happens, but I think we're all pretty comfy taking the Jets. Next up, Qualcomm Stadium in San Diego, where the Chargers will host the Kansas City Chiefs. When the season started, before any of the first 2 weeks happened, I would have taken Kansas City, but they suck. They are horrible. And now no Jamal Charles. For the whole year. Matt Castle, I don't know what the hell happened to this guy. I really don't.
He's been terrible.
Maybe it was the soft schedule, but and the Chargers, let's be honest, guys, they could have easily beaten the Patriots.
Oh, they gacked that game so bad.
They gacked that
so
game
many
so
stupid
bad.
Plays. So many
yeah, they
stupid
fumbled
plays.
Like crazy. I think Noor fires these guys up. They come out angry, and I think they blow out the Chiefs.
Yeah.
Andy?
Well, I'd like to take the Chiefs just because I'm, you know, pissed off about that game, the, how shitty San Diego played. But, you know, the Chiefs are awful, so I'm going with San Diego.
San Diego, no doubt. It's going to be ugly. I think, yeah, especially at San Diego, they're going to destroy them.
Yeah, it's not a pretty.
Watch the Chiefs fucking win.
I know.
With who? Who's there? Thomas Jones is their tailback? Is that what's
talking
about? All right. We go to Century. I didn't even. Justin and I were talking about this in pre-production. I didn't realize they changed the name of the field. Century Link Field in Seattle. I guess Quest was bought. I don't know. The Seahawks host the Arizona Cardinals. Big game in that division.
I'm cutting you off right now. Here is my upset and my lock of the week. Bang. The Seahawks.
Seahawks at home?
Win this game at home.
Okay. All right. I don't think so. I think Arizona will come out after a tough loss to the Redskins, a game they probably could have won.
Nah, but the Redskins owned them that game. Arizona, they were lucky to be hanging around. They got a couple lucky plays. And you know, they gave up 400 yards to Cam Newton in that first game. And I don't think Tavares Jackson's anything special, but Seattle always plays inspired at home. And Pete Carroll's a good guy, gets the team fired up. And I get to see them coming out hot for that first game at home and stealing that game.
Well, I disagree. I think Cobb's going to come out and play a good game. I like the Cardinals. Andy, you break the tie. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm with Justin. I don't think the Cardinals are really good enough to be a road favorite.
Okay. Attaboy.
All right. Well, so I have to root for Larry Fitzgerald catching 250 yards receiving yards. We'll see. We move on to Raymond James Stadium in Tampa. And here's another trap game, I think. The Atlanta Falcons coming off a huge primetime win over the Eagles at home. Take on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers with a huge road win.
Yeah, that was that might have saved their season. Those two touchdowns from LeGarrette Blount.
Yeah. This is a tough game. I got to be honest with you. You know what? I'm going to play it safe. I'm going to take the Falcons, but don't be surprised if Tampa steals this game at home. But I'm going to take the Falcons.
Yeah, I got to take Atlanta mainly because we're riding them to the Super Bowl from our preseason picks. So I'm going to go ahead and take Atlanta here. Tough place to go, though, into Tampa to win that game. But I think Atlanta's feeling good after that win against Philly. So I think they go in and take care of business.
Andy?
Again, I could go either way on this one, so I'm going with my gun on Tampa Bay.
Okay. So, really? All right. So we got one upset special from Mr. Flanagan, the Bucks.
Well, Tampa's actually favored, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, isn't that weird? I find that very strange, but that's okay.
It does seem odd.
Yeah, it does seem odd. All right. We go to Soldier Field in Chicago. And the oldest rivalry in the NFL, and last year they met in the postseason for the first time ever, the Chicago Bears and the Green Bay Packers. And you know what? My upset special of the week, Jay Cutler and the Bears win at home over the Packers. That's my upset pick this week.
Well, since Jay Cutler came out today and said he doesn't know if he'll make it through the year alive after last week, I don't go against Green Bay until they give me a reason not to. I believe in Aaron Rodgers, man crush or not. And I think they go into Chicago and take care of the Bears. It'll be close early, but I think Green Bay pulls away late.
Okay. Andy?
You know, Green Bay always loses a couple fluky games a year, and it feels like this could be one of them, but I don't have the balls to do it. I'm going with Green Bay.
I mean, Drew Brees just threw all over Chicago last week.
Yeah.
And I could see Aaron Rodgers doing that and more.
Well, you know, right now they're 50-50 because the first three quarterbacks this year they faced, Matt Ryan, Aaron
Rodgers. Yeah, but Ryan's not a big numbers guy. He may get his touchdowns. Like, even against Philly, he got four touchdowns, but very few yards. I mean, he doesn't.
Less than 200 yards, yeah.
Yeah, he doesn't throw all over teams. I mean, Brees and Rodgers, those guys are just relentless. And the receiving core in each of those teams is just a lot more widespread and lethal than Atlanta. Atlanta has two stud receivers and Gonzalez, but they don't have the widespread talent that Green Bay and New Orleans has.
I needed to pick an upset, and we ran out of games, and I'm not picking the upsets in either of these last two, so this was the one I had
Come on,
to go
take
with.
Indy. Manned up and take Indy.
No way. I was going to take Oakland, but I think just won that game. Anyway, I'm taking the Bears. We'll see what happens. The Sunday night NBC game, we go to Lucas Oil Stadium in Indianapolis, and I'm sorry, I just can't do it. I'm sorry, I can't do it. They play tough against Cleveland, but this isn't Cleveland. The Steelers coming off a big win at home over the Seahawks. I think they're going to come in. They're going to punch the Colts right in the face. I like the Steelers.
Yeah, Steelers win this easy.
Yeah, it's going to be an ugly season for Indy. Steelers.
And Monday night, the home opener in Arlington at Cowboys Stadium in Dallas, where I think Troy Aikman's coming out of retirement, and I'm sure Tony Dorsett will probably run the ball, and maybe Drew Pearson. Who knows? Because there's so many banged up Cowboys. The home opener against the Washington Redskins, another one of the greatest rivalries in the NFL. I'm sorry. I just picked the Cowboys because I always do. But I'll make this point that I can't. I mean, the defense is concerning me because they made Alex Smith look like a world beater this past week and almost came away with a loss. I can't. If they lose to Rex Grossman, I think I might have to put a bullet in my head.
Well, Washington's. I mean, they've looked good and their offense has been pretty good and the D is pretty good. I think they're gonna be better than the team's thought, but I don't see them going into Dallas and winning. Romo's gonna play. And Austin is out, obviously, and Felix Jones, I'm not sure his status. But I think Dallas has a little too much pride to lose this game at home against Washington. If it was Philly or the Giants, I'd be a little more worried, but I think they beat Washington at home. But I wouldn't be shocked if Washington won it. But.
All right. Andy, what do you think?
Yeah, about the same. It wouldn't be a shock if Washington won, but I'll give Dallas the benefit of the doubt for now.
Okay. So we'll see what happens. It's going to be a good game Monday night in the home opener in Big D. So there's your week three picks. Just to recap, we won't pick all of them, but my upset special is Bears over Packers, and my lock is Lions over Vikings. Justin, what were your lock was?
They're both Seattle.
Right. So Seattle upset win over Arizona, and that is your lock. Andy, what was your upset? What do you think your big upset of the week?
The only upset I picked was Seattle, but the lock I would go with Pittsburgh.
Okay, Pittsburgh going in and beating up the Colts. So there are our week three picks. Let us know what you think on the Facebook page. Maybe give us a couple of your – you don't have to go to your whole schedule if you want. It'd be great, but if you want to pick your –
But definitely
maybe,
get in the pick league on the message board.
Absolutely, yes. Yes, absolutely. Still not too late to do it. So because the way that our man D-Ray does the points and stuff, you can miss a week and you'd still be in decent shape. So if you haven't hopped on yet, hop on now. You don't want to miss too many more weeks. So, but then next week is one more week where everybody plays, and then week five is when we start the buys. So there you go. There's your week three picks from your PICs here at the Place to Be podcast.
Yeah, so I guess, is there anything else on the docket?
Andy, I just wanted to ask you one question before we go off the air. What do you think of midgets playing basketball?
I fucking love it. I know that.
It's true, I do.
Go for our wrestling fan nation members. If there's an indie show close by and you got the money and you got some time, go to it. Indie shows are fun. You know, that weird, that kind of, you know, bingo hall / school gym atmosphere. It's just so different. You know, obviously it's nothing like a pay-per-view or a Raw or a SmackDown, but an indie show just has that special something. If you feel like the guys are working extra hard for you. So if you have an indie show near you, go to one.
All right, so we're going to wrap up. I think, of course, there's only one song we got with tonight. Is the newly reigning AL East champions. No one thought they'd be able to do it this year with the juggernaut Red Sox, but the mighty, gritty underdog Yankees have come from behind and locked down the division, and they'll look on pace to win probably, 96, 97 games. So there you have it. Hope you enjoyed the show. Hope you enjoyed everything else. Make sure you get your comments in. I'm going to have the thread up for WrestleMania 9 over the weekend. We'll be doing that Monday night, and next week we'll be back with the wrestling headlines, news, and our Week 4 NFL preview. So I want to thank our buddy Andrew for coming on. Mm-hmm. We're talking some Curb and some NWF. And with that, we are out. Take care. Have a good night. Have a good weekend. We'll talk to you next week.
Peace.